Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back once again with Dom. Dom, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm very excited to be here talking some genius again. It's been far too long. It's been far too long since I saw this episode, which we'll get onto in a bit. And it's been far too long since we talked to our guest, who is a good friend of the show and also of many other shows. It's Mike Bloom and Yoshmaker.
I don't know what that means, but I'll take it. I got to get Korean back in the vernacular once more. I was trying to, before this, come up with some sort of terminology for us, like the three mins, but I feel like I'm a little Jinho here and that there's like no real commonality between all of our names to sum us up in an aggregate way.
Yeah, Bloomstone and Harvey. It's so obvious. Don't you see it?
Sounds like a law firm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. It very much does. But Mike, yeah,
that was a piece of feedback in our survey that me and Colin just have no strand of commonality whatsoever. So we're on the right track there.
Yeah. Sorry, Mike. But thank you, first of all, for coming back on the show with us. As Dom said, it has been a while, but it is always a treat getting to talk to you.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, I'm so happy to be able to come on, and I mean, you guys were the ones to get me personally into the genius, as well as I know so many members of the reality TV community. So to be able to take this show and talk about it in any way, shape, or form, in any time frame with the people that actually brought me on board is really, really exciting. And yeah, I think the last time I was on here, Dom and I were talking the first five episodes of Australian Survivor when things were so bright and so promising, and things might have arguably taken a different turn from there on out after the fifth episode.
Well, yeah. I don't even remember that. I had blocked that from my mind, so the fact that you can that's so vivid for you is impressive.
Yeah, yeah. Back in the glory days of Australian Survivor is what we call it. It's not Survivor Australia. It's Australian Survivor, right?
Yep. Now that it's coming back for a season two, you know, I feel like it's officially established itself as a brand, as Australian Survivor. So,
can we get an official ruling from Rob on that at some point?
I believe it's Australian Survivor. I mean, I feel like all the promotional material as well. I mean, if 10 is marketing it as a Survivor or Australian Survivor, just like, you know, Survivor New Zealand is officially marketing itself as Survivor NZ. I feel like you have to trust the higher ups, right? And sort of use their terminology, no matter what sort of questionable components they may contain.
Yeah, I think actually now that I'm thinking about it, I think the logo literally says Australian Survivor. It feels, for whatever reason, it seems like almost the equivalent of like going to France and having them call them French fries there.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I mean, they also, it's a thing that like involves Australians, but also films in a separate location, you know, and I don't know. They're also not using any sort of subtitles. You know, I guess it's because they're staying in Samoa, but it's not like Australian Survivor 2, Back to the Island or something like that. They're keeping it nice and simple. But I guess, you know, the adjective is all that matters, which I don't know. It'd be interesting if like Big Brother Canada came back, but it was called like Canadian Big Brother now. It feels a little differently. It rolls off the tongue a little differently, right? Because we're used to something else.
I think that's definitely true. But let's not get bogged down today in the ins and outs of Australian Survivor, if that is, in fact, what we're
going to do. Oh, darn. I had, like, copious notes on all this and all the New Zealand Survivor as well, which, you know, I've been catching Colin up on in the, you know, in the first few episodes before he eventually decides to take the leap and check it out, because it's gotten very good the past few weeks.
Okay, well, actually, let's do get bogged down just quickly in the New Zealand Survivor, because I'm sure there are going to be people listening to this podcast, just to this point into the podcast, that have not seen The Genius, probably even at all, but do know and like you, Mike Bloom, and so we're not going to spoil anything just yet. We're not in the spoiler zone yet, although we will be getting there, and when we do, that is going to be full all four seasons. Total spoilers. Everything is fair game, so just be aware of that, and I'll reiterate it once we do get into the spoiler zone. But Mike, I flagged up, I mentioned this on our Survivor Season 34 in Review podcast, which incidentally people can be finding on iTunes or just Google to find our blog page, along with a podcast we recently did about, or Dom recently did with Mike Botta, about the snap election in the United Kingdom. Both of those were a lot of fun. At least the Survivor 34 one was for me to record and to listen to. Dom and Mike talk about the UK election was a lot of fun, so check those out. But Mike, I mentioned to you, as I was saying in that Survivor 34 podcast, as the guy who knows about Survivor New Zealand and who was keeping me informed on that, are you still liking it, or is this a Survivor or an Australian Survivor thing where it's kind of losing its luster?
I mean, well, I'll also, like, sort of, I don't know, retcon my own words about the joke I made about Australian Survivor, and that I will say overall about that season, the pre-merge, even after episode 5, I think is still incredible. Spoilers for Australian Survivor season 1, skip ahead like a full minute if you don't want to hear these thoughts or if you don't want to be spoiled. I did really enjoy the second half of the pre-merge, even though it did become a bit of like an oolonging, Matt singing, whatever verb you want to apply to that. The post-merge, there was that big gap of time where things were still interesting, but albeit a little, I wouldn't say repetitive, but a little more stagnant. But the finale, I'll admit, you know, I'm probably much more positive on the winner of Australian Survivor than a lot of others. But that finale, for my mark, might be one of the best Survivor finales, period. Just in terms of pure climactic action and building a narrative, I think it is second to none. But I guess segueing into New Zealand Survivor, you know, I think I was on Nick Idanza's podcast on RHAP a couple weeks ago with the last pre-merge episodes, and we had sort of been talking about how when you do – for those of you that don't know, Australian Survivor did 3 episodes a week, but there was basically a vote out each and every week. There were a couple of those non-elimination episodes, but since there was such a big cast, we got basically 2 to 3 vote outs every week. New Zealand Survivor airs twice a week. But often in the pre-merge, what would happen is the first episode would be, you know, the reward challenge and the Redemption Island duel. Then the second episode would be the immunity challenge and the tribal council. So that's a lot of material. That is 2.5 hours covering 3 days of Survivor. It's sort of those cases where it's like careful what you wish for because you just might get it. I know especially after a season like Survivor Game Changers, a lot of the Survivor community is saying at large, you know, we want more access to find out what's going on the island. We got that in the Survivor New Zealand pre-merge. Some might say a little bit too much just because I do feel like there are some surprises that could come out at Tribal Council where if you get more than enough information about what's going to happen, it kind of dulls the surprise a bit. So what I will say then going into the merge is A, things have picked up in terms of boots. They usually do, at least for the past couple weeks since the merge, have done someone going home every episode, which is so interesting. You would think that, you know, since the post-merge, some argue is one of the most exciting parts of the game, they would do the opposite. They say, okay, let's sort of like yada yada through the pre-merge, and then the post-merge is really where we get to see these relationships interact. But it's almost like we've built out our characters in the first half of the season. We know who they are. Now let's see them really, you know, hit the rubber, really start interacting with each other. And it's really picked up in terms of gameplay. And since we know so much about them, you know, the narrative works really well as well. I will say from a storytelling perspective, I think there's maybe only a couple of winner possibilities at this point. And at the point that we're recording this, I believe we are 5 on the game proper and 3 on Redemption Island. And it's supposed to end next week. I'll actually be covering for Nick Iadanza for RHAP next week. So I'll definitely give my thoughts on the season overall there. But I've been enjoying it throughout. But I'd say that in the past few weeks, it sort of has ramped up from good TV to great TV. I wouldn't say it's must-watch TV at this point, but it certainly has stepped up a level of quality from a television perspective since the merge happened.
Is it team TV? That's the real question.
He hasn't made an appearance yet. He did not get to play in Nicaragua. I know he played in the Philippines and he played on the Mamanuka Islands. But who knows? Maybe he'll come in as a reward. You know, there are a lot of super fans on Survivor New Zealand, so I'm sure they'd be psyched to see him.
Okay, well, Mike, excellent. Whenever I someday have some free time, I definitely plan on marathoning that very soon. But Mike, I think let's get into the business at hand today, and that is talking about some of the genius. We are coming up on the day that we're recording this. We're recording this on a Sunday. And by the way, the last Sunday morning that I spent podcasting about the genius was also the day that the town of Rockport decided to send out the old wood chipper to my apartment parking lot. So hopefully that doesn't happen again today. But we are coming up on the 2-year anniversary of the Genius 4 season premiere. And frankly, we really just wanted an excuse to get you, Mike, back in here and an excuse to talk about the genius in kind of a larger sense, just because it's been a long time. And we're using a rewatch of that season premiere. This is an all-star season to really just talk in kind of general terms about the show and what we like about it and kind of how we view it now 2 years later with the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah, I know for many of us as Genius fans, that was such an iconic episode, and just there was so much hype and expectations building up to that, that it's kind of fun now that we're 2 years removed and we don't have all of that clouding our judgment to just watch the episode again and see what looks different, what looks the same, and how many of our predictions look completely absurd in retrospect, as they always do.
Yeah.
And this date also holds a lot of significance for me because I got married on June 27th, 2015. I actually remember I watched the first episode in my hotel room in St. Lucia, where my wife and I went on our honeymoon right after we got married. So these dates are all swimming back to me and so many memories associated with them. I'm happy to pontificate on those times in more ways than one.
Well, immediately switching topics of this entire podcast. Mike, we're going to do a wedding retrospective podcast now.
Oh, boy. Lovely. Well, I just gave my anniversary gifts to my wife, so I guess tis the season, right?
Oh, wow. Okay. Jumping the gun a little bit, or is this a multi-part gift? Are you setting the bar that high this early into your marriage?
No, it was just one of those things where, you know, it's on as we're recording this, it's a couple of days from now. And I think it's always awkward when you have your anniversary on a day of the week because, you know, you want to be able to do as many big things as possible. And unfortunately, when it's on a Tuesday, you don't really have that time. So we thought we'd just like give our gifts to each other. We're going to go to the gift that I got, which was a spa day after we record this. So it's a weekend. We had a lot of time, so we're like, let's just give our gifts to each other now. It's one of those things where it's like, if your birthday is during the week, you can celebrate during the weekend. I'm only a couple years into the marriage institution, but I feel like that can loosely apply to anniversaries as well.
I think that makes a lot of sense. That's just like, I've never considered anything even remotely along those lines, but I think now that you explain it, that makes a lot of sense to me. So Mike, yeah, like Dom mentioned earlier, but I think it's worth getting just back into, for me, as I was watching the beginning of this episode again, and I think we can just kind of dive into it, and this is probably going to be the spoiler zone coming up very soon, but just the hype that I had built up in my mind for this episode. What was that like for you? I guess you also had your wedding hype going on as well. But was that something that when you rewatched this came like flashback to you?
Absolutely, and I think the opening, which I know in your most recent Genius podcast when you guys finished up season 3. And we're really bringing things full circle now. But you guys were talking about this idea of how, you know, you love the season 3 finale opener, but that season 4 premiere opener is absolutely insane. And I think that the hype that they're building in with the entrances at the beginning of this episode really got my heart pumping. Admittedly, I have not watched too much Genius in the time between season 4 ended and now. I don't know if Society Game counts as like Genius adjacent. So I've watched some of that, but I haven't been able to have the time to be able to really investigate the seasons on a rewatch. So, you know, I'm going off of just the memory here of when I was watching this, I had just finished binging all 3 seasons. So it really was fresh in my mind. So I was very, very hyped. Usually I am not a huge fan of all returning player seasons. I think some of them can work out really well, but a lot of what draws me to reality TV are people that don't know each other working together to do whatever common goal or solitary goals there might be. This is a little bit of a different situation considering that the Genius also combines like well-known celebrities with regular people, especially in the 3rd season. But I mean, to open this episode, when you get the 3 winners and you get the 3 runners-up, I mean, they mentioned the Avengers at one point, and I feel like that's actually not too crazy of a comparison of like, here are some of the biggest characters of this fantastic TV show all coming together to work for and against each other.
And I think some of the resistance to returning player seasons comes from the fact that on both Survivor and Big Brother, which are these very long-lasting franchises now, we just have so many of them that they don't feel that special anymore. And especially when it's, you know, you have 2 or 3 returning players come back, and maybe they're not the ones that anyone was really that excited to see return in the first place. With this, like they marketed it as the Genius Grand Final, and they really lived up to that tagline. And these were people who, with 1 or 2 exceptions, like these were the heavy hitters of the show that you really wanted to see come back. And even some of the people who had question marks over them really justify their places in the season.
Right. I think one common theme that we see on Survivor, like All-Star seasons, particularly ones that they call like game changers, is hey, how are you calling Haley Ford a game changer, but Russell Hanson, you're not calling him a game changer? Like, why isn't he there with the genius? They really brought back pretty much everyone that I feel like they had to bring back. There are definitely people that we would have loved to see back, but I think they got all of the, like, mandatory people, like you're mentioning, and I don't think this is a coincidence. They brought back the final, not only the final two, but the final three from all of the seasons.
And it's interesting. I want to pose the question here because, you know, I think we're getting into the spoiler zone stuff, but I think knowing how
let's
the
officially
season...
enter the spoiler zone. Sorry, Mike. We're in the spoiler zone now. We're there. If you have not seen all of the genius, go watch all of the genius before you even eat again.
Yeah, we will see you in 2 days for the remainder of this podcast.
Dr. Yoon Sung can give you some, like, supplements or something, dietary supplements to get you through while you're binging. So what I want to ask is, you know, obviously the winners are going to have a huge impact on this season. Dongmin's going to become a two-timer. Sangmin's going to make a giant crater in the game in the three episodes that he's in. Jinho's going to make it super far. But it is interesting. I completely forgotten that this whole beginning montage in this, you know, tarnished room has Bandage Man sort of going into this monologue about, you know, people being defeated due to their lack of politicking or their own innocence or, you know, them being outsmarted. I do wonder what the season would have looked like if they almost skewed it like a Survivor Second Chance. If they were saying, like, these people couldn't win their season, now we're bringing them back to see if they are able to capitalize on what they once failed at. And I know, obviously, that would mean no Sangmin, no Jinho, no Dongmin, and that would be a travesty. Maybe you put in their stead, I don't know, you put Ah Young in there, you get Poong in there if What's in My Fridge is in reruns or
your
something.
Your boy, man. Yeah, mark the time. We're like 15 minutes in, and it's the first Kim Poong reference from Mike Bloom.
I mean, it's relevant to Genius Season 4. He ends up winning a challenge on a season that he's not even on, so I think it just proves how great Poong is. But
that's right.
I do wonder, obviously, I think some of the enjoyment of the season would be marred, but it is sort of an interesting sort of mixed messaging where from the beginning they're saying, like, some of these players weren't able to win when you have, like, three big winners in there. And maybe if they bring in stronger theming, I don't know if theming is necessary for this type of season, but I do wonder just off the top of my head what this would look like if they say, okay, nobody, no winners. We're going to bring back a bunch of people who could have won to see if they're going to be able to face off against each other and see if some of them be able to actually live up to their once failures and take home the crown.
It's an interesting thought experiment for sure. And I think they recognize that so much of the gameplay and the narrative that they put the gameplay into is going to be driven by the winners. So in that, that opening montage that you mentioned, the winners get this their own triumphal introductory sequences, whereas every non-winner is reduced to this, like, 1 second clip on the TV screen for their summarizing their failure as a player, why they lost. So it would be fun to see things on a more even playing field, but as you say, I think the winners, especially Sangmin and Dongmin, are so far ahead of the pack, maybe not in terms of gameplay, although we can certainly argue that, but in terms of their TV presence and their charisma on screen, that you it's hard to imagine the season taking place without them. And Jinho, even if he's maybe not the most not the loudest player, is certainly one of the most iconic players, and again, you can't really imagine the season without him there either.
Yeah, first of all, thank God the gardener, like the lawn mowing guy, has just shown up. So you may be able to hear that now on my end of the podcast. But
he's going to be a 2-time winner. He's the best returning player.
Oh my
player
God, out. I cannot believe this is happening again. But thank God, at least it's not a wood chipper again. But secondly, I think one just consideration. I think Mike, you make good points about, like, there may have been like better theming structure that could have been implemented if they felt like they were going to keep going for a while. But I think it was known, at least to, like, the executive producer, the one that they decided when he said, I don't want to do anymore, they said, well, we're done. We don't want to do it without you. I think he went in there being open about, this is going to be the last season. This is going to be the big blowout season. And I think, frankly, you can't do that without Jinho and Sangmin. I think those are the two you just must have. They are the stars of the franchise to this point.
And I think it's a fun bookend as well, where, you know, again, getting into these, like, the opening entrances, which take like 15 to 20 minutes of the hour and 20 episode. But I feel like it's well deserved because, again, the genius has such great contestants on it that you really want to bring everyone in with a fanfare, even those that might not necessarily had had such a big impact in the game as the big three winners or other runners up, etc. But I love that it's bookended almost the season in that it starts with Segment essentially convincing everyone else, like, hey, you know what? The prize pool has shrunk in between seasons. We're going to, you know, rage against the machine. Let's protest against the producers and get as much money out of this as possible. And then the season ends with Segment leading everyone in like a ring around the rosy in the Gothic cathedral of the center lobby to celebrate how great the genius is. So again, I think this goes back to what you guys were just saying, where, like, no matter what the theming would be, the genius is not the genius without Lee Sangman on it. And I think it shows here where, like, he is able to create such a fantastic show, and he knows it, that the entertainment factor would suffer completely without him on this season.
And I think, so Dongmin going back-to-back, in one sense, is a great outcome for the producers. It's also kind of awkward, though, because when the official philosophy of the show is, and they quote it, victory cannot be achieved in the same way, as such, their stories will not be repeated in the same way, and then Dongmin's story repeats in literally the exact same way. It's kind of undermining the entire premise. And for someone like Sangmin, like, he is so, there is so much depth to his bag of tricks that if he ended up going and winning again, you know that there would be some crazy twist along the way. There would be something new in his arsenal that he pulled out of the hat. With Dongmin, it feels like you saw everything there was to see to some extent, and you saw more of it this season, but ultimately it was just more of the same. So it's, you know, you don't get the transformative storyline of, let's say, John Stott goes from being first boot to a winner, or there are so many ways that could play out, and instead it's just Dongmin doing Dongmin things and showing why he's arguably the best of all time.
Well, I also think that the thing with Dongmin compared to Sangmin in that respect is people, I feel like Dongmin carries himself in such a confident and not even borderline cocky, like overtly cocky manner in certain points, where I kind of like Will Kirby, I think he puts it out there like, I'm going to be tremendously successful. And then when he is, people aren't like overly surprised. They're impressed, but they're not, you know, totally taken aback by it. Whereas I think Sangmin really defied a lot of people's expectations, at least as far as I would imagine, based on, you know, what we've heard about him outside the game.
And I'll push back a little bit on what you said, Dom, about Dongmin, because I'll admit that Dongmin surprised me in season four. Now, I'll admit going in, I was not the biggest Dongmin fan, especially compared to Hyunmin. I believe actually the last time I was on the Genius podcast with you guys was when we recapped Fish Shop, which I know was a big episode for Hyunmin. I believe I used the term Hyunman to describe my love for him. But going in, I was like, okay, Dongmin's a winner, but he was my least favorite, you know, 3 out of 3. And I think you guys actually had the similar attitude as well. But I will say what turned me around on Dongmin this season was, I do agree that, like, if you're looking at it from a result-oriented perspective, Dom, that, you know, he did place exactly the same. But I was more impressed with him this season because I think he definitely showed his social skills, not necessarily tact, but definitely skills in season three. There's going to be this like nice subtitle that comes up when this Winners Alliance is talking in this premiere episode where it's like, Jinho values strategy above people, Dongmin values people above strategy, right? He's always about creating coalitions and alliances. But I feel like this season, Dongmin proved that he actually has a skill set to him as well. You know, I'm thinking about like the cooperative hold'em when he's able to do the matchstick puzzle. I'm thinking about the finale with the mystery sign where, you know, he's able to really do some crazy stuff with math. So I'll admit he really impressed me in this season. So I do agree that, like, while on the outside you could say, oh yeah, Dongmin did the exact same stuff to get the exact same result, I think he actually showed a little bit more of what tools he has in his tool belt rather than just showing the one big glorious hammer that he has that he showed off in season three as well.
I'm completely with you there, Mike, where I'm positive we came into season four saying to ourselves, Sangmin is the best player ever, and Hyunmin is the one who, if he has a really good season here, could potentially contend for that title. By the end of this season, after finding out, oh my god, Dongmin can do math and things of that nature to a preposterous extent, I don't think it's unfair. I know I speak for me and Koss, and I believe Dom as well. Dongmin, to me, is the best player in the history of reality TV, like the most capable player across what this game requires of him.
Okay, he's certainly in that top tier, whoever else happens to be there with him. To elaborate on what I said, I think if you had had someone like Dr. Yunsun winning, let's say, you would say coming in, okay, he's he has a chance to win like everyone else, but he's not at the top of your power rankings. And if he had gone on to win, he would have had to show a new side to himself in order to make that possible. Whereas for Dongmin, I feel like we saw a new side to him, but that side already existed, and maybe we just didn't give him enough credit back in season 3. Like, we saw glimmers of all of these various aspects to him back then, but we just didn't pick up on them at the time, and we now have further kind of validation of all of those. So I don't think it's so much that we saw a new side to him, it's just that I guess it's not so much that there was a new side to him that came out or that was discovered, it was we didn't see it, and now we've been educated, and we finally see the light.
And I will say that I think from a narrative perspective, I would argue that of the top two, I think if Kyunghoon was able to pull it out, I think that would be a much better story. It's sort of like what you were talking about before with Junsok, this idea of like, here's a guy who, you know, I believe his subtitle basically called him what, like the unpredictable game destroyer.
Yeah.
And he has this reputation of in the first two episodes of season 3 of like, here's a guy that's just going to fuck everything up for you if you try to join up with him. And it even shows in this episode, it's basically going to be his reputation throughout the first 3 episodes. And even corroborates with, you know, Sangmin, the dog owner, ends up going basically because of Kyunghoon, both directly and indirectly. But he's able to really rally. You know, he wins 4 death matches. And I feel like, and I know you guys were talking about this as well when you're doing your episodic reviews as the season went along, that like this season very quickly turned into like Kyunghoon overcoming the odds, really showing that, you know, this guy who was definitely, I think, one of the bigger head scratchers of people on the cast when the cast list first came out, he was able to really show the skill set that he had and how he was able to really defy the odds to make it to the end. So much so that, you know, I'm usually the one that roots for the more unpredictable outcome, and Kyunghoon was definitely more of an underdog, which makes sense considering the dog comparison he got with Sangmin. And if he ended up beating Dongmin, that would just be an insane result, but also really build nicely into the narrative he had the entire season.
A part of me would have felt like the genius was scripted, if that had been how it went.
Right, and I think part of the appeal to All-Star seasons is you have these people, like I would say Sarah in Game Changers, who maybe showed some potential on their first outing, but never really struck you as in that top tier of players, who are able to come back and prove themselves and show you that they belong there. And so it would have been fun if, let's say, you know, Dr. Yunsung or John Sok or someone had gone on to win the All-Star season. But equally, I like that coming into the finale, we had every single player left would have been an amazing winner in narrative terms for completely different reasons. You know, Dongmin going back-to-back, Heung-min beating the master and finally entering that top tier himself. And then Kyunghoon going from the joke of the cast, the unpredictable game destroyer, to it's hard to say where he would rank alongside, you know, Sangmin or Dongmin or whoever else. But for him to actually become a winner of not just the genius, but the genius grand final would be, as Colin says, you couldn't script that. It would seem unrealistic.
That's what I mean. Like, a part of me would always feel that way. And I also just kind of want to, like, at least put a question out there for the official record on Kyunghoon. Like, I agree, the story would be unbelievably incredible. And he did show some tremendous improvement over the course of this season, and, like, some amazing talent for particularly, like, the math kind of games. But I really question whether going to 4 out of the 11 death matches is a long-term great plan. Like, if that's something that we should necessarily be applauding. Like, I get that when he wins all of them, that's awesome. And he's the first and only person to win win 4 in one season. But when you're going to over a third of the death matches, when only 2 people are going each round, to me, that still suggests that you're doing something wrong. And it just happens to be working out for him.
It's interesting in that I wonder, had they not used the deathmatch conventions that they did this season, which for those of you that might not remember, it was that there were, you know, 11 deathmatches from previous seasons. And essentially what they would do is that every round, the 2 deathmatch candidates would each pick games to nullify. And then out of the group that was left over, they would do a random draw to pick what was left. And so I still, even a few years looking back, are of 2 minds on this idea. I think that it's good in that it shows that the games are not predetermined. I don't know how many genius truthers are out there putting on their tinfoil hats and saying, oh, you know, they knew that Hyunmin was going in season three, Hyunmin was going to lose the Constellation game, so they pulled out, you know, 12 Jangi because they knew he'd do well at it. I know that, like, other shows like The Challenge, there's a lot of tinfoil hat theories about, like, they wanted to keep this person around, so they put in, you know, this game at this time. This eliminates the idea by saying that this is going to be a purely random draw. At the same time, I don't know how I feel about the idea that, oh yeah, you know, since there's significant time between filming of each episode, you can veritably go home and practice these death matches beforehand, which I think really works out well for Kyung-hoon in that since he knows essentially what the games are going to be, he's going to be able to say, okay, this is how I handle Gil-hap. This is how I'm able to handle Quattro. And as a result, I think he's able to really help himself through those death matches too.
Well, look at the people who end up making that final four, and I would say these are probably even as far back as the final five. If we add in Junsok too, along with Jinho and that final three, I would imagine these are all people who are practicing a lot once they got down to the last few death matches. Whereas someone like Kyungran, she shows up at the beginning of this episode and doesn't know who Hyunmin is, and like doesn't when it's revealed that the games are going to be games they've played on previous seasons. They cut to her saying, "Oh my God, I'm ruined," which she was. Like, that's how you lose 59-7.
And I do like that the history of the game is incorporated into the structure of the All-Star season in a way. And I don't know that anyone was saying, oh, we need to have betting black and white back. But the fact that it's there is just a nice homage to what came before. In the same way that I think, you know, Survivor All-Stars would have been less to some degree if, let's say, the final immunity challenge hadn't been hands on a hard idol, right? Like, it's nice to have those throwbacks to what made the show what it is today and to what gave you the momentum to culminate in an All-Star season.
And no, I think that's a good point. And I think that it's good to like really acknowledge, like we said, at this time, the executive producers knew like this is how we're going to end it. I think this is a great, just generally across the board with the season, a fantastic acknowledgement of the impact that the show has really had both on Korean television and obviously with non-Koreans as we're all speaking here. I wonder, though, if it also would have been interesting if, you know, I'm sorry, I keep referencing The Challenge a lot here, but The Challenge, Champs versus Pros, was like a 6-week miniseries that they just finished airing. And they used basically all previous challenges from previous seasons. But like, hey, you guys are the best of the best. We're going to put a twist on them. You know, I wonder if it would have done like what some additional in their moment, if that could have been the last little thing that they needed to put in there in order to make sure, like, hey, you thought you could go home and rehearse and practice things to be able to crush people at the death match? Well, this is something that really puts people more on an even playing field.
Okay, so kind of like what we ended up seeing, how they ran Quattro was like a completely different game.
Exactly, yeah. It's saying like, hey, here's a familiar structure that you're used to, but in the Genius, since you really have to be able to think on your feet in order to win, we're going to give you an additional twist to put in there. You know, this ain't your mama's same number hunt.
Okay, I like that. And what did you make just in general? Like, so you're just not a fan of having that kind of deathmatch structure in general for here are the 11 games that we're going to play, because I thought it was going to be it's going to be the same 11 in the draw every week, and you can each veto three. Would you have been okay with that?
That would have been interesting, though. I feel like, you know, even in the first two episodes of season one, people were saying like, oh God, I hope it's not, you know, rock, paper, scissors every single episode. And so we were happy to see Tactical Yutnori for the third episode, only to quickly grimace when we realized that we have no idea how Tactical Yutnori is played. But I think that would have been an interesting idea, but it could have created this idea of, you know, what I will say about this format that I do like is that it does diversify the games, and that like once a game is played, it is out. And there is some strategy in there as well where they're saying like, you know, oh God, you know, I don't know if I want to keep 12 Jangi in there because that means that, you know, I might face off against Hyunmin against it one day, even though Hyunmin's going to lose on 12 Jangi, surprisingly. This also segues interestingly into like another question that I have looking back on this season. I know that there are usually a lot of like big genius moments that are affiliated with death matches. Do you guys have any moments off the top of your head that are like the big death match moments of the season? I have a couple, but I'd be interested to hear what you guys think.
Oh, of this season?
Of season four in particular.
I would say the entire Sangmin versus Kyung-hoon showdown, especially when there's this glimmer of hope for Sangmin towards the end that Kyungran has lied, and so if things break a certain way, then Sangmin could maybe somehow sneak back into it. And Kyung-hoon just sees right through her and makes the right bet and closes the door. And then everyone's heart shattered into pieces at that exact moment.
Yeah, I would also say, I actually think one of the most memorable death matches, even though it's not competitive, is the one you just mentioned, Mike, Tactical Ute Nori, where it's Dongmin just steamrolling the team of Jinho and Yeowon.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good one. And I think there are a couple of examples that that you were talking about as well, of like this idea that going in there was an odds on favorite and that person ended up losing. I'm thinking of, Indian Poker, where it was Kyung Ran beating a poker player at Indian Poker, or what I just mentioned, 12 Jangi, where Hyunmin both in season 3 wins the death match and crushes Dongmin in the first round of the finals with that game and ends up losing to him at the very end of the day. So I know you were talking before about this idea of, oh, Hyunmin's able to finally defeat the master, but Dongmin actually kind of defeats the Jangi master during that death match. So, I mean, I don't want to say that there's anything like outside of that Sangmin Kyunghoon moment, anything that's incredible television, but I think there are still some great moments in the death match as well, which really shows just how strong this season is.
Yeah, and I think if you go back and think back to that final 3 episode, Dongmin is faced in that last round of the game against SNL. He knows, I'm going to the death match, and I'm choosing, essentially, which one I'm playing against. I know it's going to be 12 Jangi, and he says, give me Hyunmin instead of give me Kyunghoon, because he wants to overtake the master, I think. So I guess let's get into this main match itself. And this is ID Exchange. This is probably my favorite season premiere main match, but let's quickly just go through those. Dom, I know you're a big fan of Food Chain, and I'm a big fan of Fruit Stand in general. Mike, we have those two and the 1-2-3 game as well. How would you rank those four of the season premiere games?
I mean, Food Chain I really enjoy as well, but it is horrifically complex, so much so that like you could basically dedicate an entire show to that in general.
We did. And it's been lost at the sands of time. We're going to try and unearth it for the 2-year anniversary, but carry on.
Yeah, so I would probably put that number one just because of like the idea of the game. I mean, and I think that, you know, if we're looking at episodes as well, the Quattro game that happens, that's obviously less climactic than the Food Chain game itself, but I think Food Chain might be number one for me. This is tough because, like, I feel like the question is, do you separate the game itself from the results, right? Are we coming in with results-oriented thinking of, like, the opener of season 4, ID Exchange, has this really awesome trajectory of, like, here are these alliances, we set up Kyunghoon's basically entire arc for the season, that he's basically like a flip-flopper and he's going to try to kind of, you know, betray everybody, and everyone throws up their hands in frustration and says, why did I decide to work with Kyunghoon? And then Sangmin's going to be the one to like pull a ruse over everybody's eyes at the last minute. But you have to wonder, like, on paper, is you know, ID Exchange that exciting of a game? So what I might do is I might put it number 3, but I'm not knocking it whatsoever. I just think that it's so... there were so many things that were associated with the events that happened during the game, as opposed to like the actual metrics of the game, that if we're looking at it purely on paper, it might slot number 3 for me.
Yeah, so I actually want to put a good word in here for the 1-2-3 game, which I definitely would seem a bit pedestrian if it was being done nowadays. If we'd come into episode 5 of the Genius Grand Final and it's the 1-2-3 game, I think there would have been a lot of head scratching. But just as a game to establish the Genius as the first game in the history of the show, I think it was perfect. It's not too complicated that people who aren't committed to the show yet, who don't really know the premise, will get turned away or get distracted. But equally, there's enough depth to it that we get to see lots of these fun twists along the way, including the Sangmin and Jinho Garnet incident, which I think made a lot of people fall in love with Sangmin and fall in love with the Genius at the same time.
Well, yeah, I would say I totally agree, first of all, that the 1-2-3 game, I think, is a perfect premiere episode for the Genius to kind of present the show, the kind of what it's about and how they're going to be editing the show. And obviously to have that great kind of Sangmin twist at the end from the all-time iconic figure of the series. I would say, though, like I would also suggest that, like, I think the winning streak game in that moment was really exciting for me. Like, the first time I watched it, I thought that was great, but now with the benefit of hindsight, I recognize, oh, that's maybe not as great of a death match as the Genius could put out there, and it just happened to have a really flashy result.
And maybe there might be something to be said for, because it was so iconic, any game that was there we would have this sentimental attachment to, but
I think like that the point is not, is it a great game in the abstract? It does it fulfill the role that it needs to in the context of that episode or that moment? And I think the 1-2-3 game certainly did.
Yeah, I think historical connotation is extremely important. I completely agree with you. And so I think it can be tough sometimes to like compare these premieres across the board, just because like you're almost looking at the evolution of the game. I mean, let's even compare the 1-2-3 game with Food Chain, where it's almost like, you know, if the first season is making a message of like, this is sort of what the simple concept of the show are, the season two premiere is saying, okay, you think like you know the game, this is how complicated it can get. So I think that you could almost say that each season premiere is really making a statement about, you know, what's about to come. Season three is about like, oh, it's this is really gonna depend on like the relationships that you make and, you know, how exactly you handle the other people. And season four seems to be like a mixture of all of them. You know, I feel like the idea of the IG exchange, again, is super simple in concept, but, you know, where it really comes in, I feel like just this one idea of you can only check the cards under the lights after you've traded, and otherwise you can unofficially trade. I think that's the perfect thing to put in this game to really make a big wild card factor happen. Like we see what happens with Sangmin and Kyunghoon of, you know, you also have this paranoia growing of, oh, I think this person is a noble. They said they were a noble, but for all we know, they could have gone to the bathroom room and have traded cards with somebody, you know, if unfamiliarly, and have a completely different card and screw me over at the end of the day. And that's what makes this so suspenseful as well, this first episode.
Yeah, and I think the central question here is, are you judging the game based on its theoretical exploitability, or are you judging it based on how you can realistically expect it to play out most of the time? So when we spoke about this episode as it was airing, we said, well, that idea that Kyunghoon came up with and that Hyunmin rubbished, but maybe incorrectly, of just sitting back and not literally just not doing anything once you know the identity of your card, that's actually a pretty good idea. And if everyone or the majority of the cast does that, you don't have a very exciting episode. But I think in practice, given the cast of characters that you have there, you know there's going to be a lot more to it than that. And so maybe there is some theoretical flaw, but if you don't expect that to be realized, then there's really no harm in that, as far as I can tell.
Well, the Mario Party fan in me just made me think what you were saying, Dom, in terms of the, I don't know if you guys have watched like the YouTube videos, Luigi Wins by Doing Nothing, where they'll do a bunch of Mario Party. Yeah, so that reminds me, it makes me kind of think, is Kyunghoon like the Luigi of the Genius Four, in terms of like, he's a fuddy-duddy, nobody really takes him seriously, but almost in like a Luigi's Mansion-esque arc, he's able to really show his own. Granted, he ends up losing in the end because Luigi almost always does, but that's a weird comparison I never thought until you made that comparison, Dom.
But is he more the Waluigi? Is he the chaotic evil?
Yeah. See, I think he is the anti-Luigi, because he cannot win by standing still. He's incapable of standing still. If you paid him the entire maximum possible Garnet prize for the season just to sit back and not do anything for an episode, I'm not sure he'd be able to do it. And yet somehow is able to make it work for him. And I'm still not sure how much of that is luck and how much of it is some weird combination of skills he has that keeps carrying him forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess he's sort of his Luigi and Waluigi all in one. He's the Luigi family composed into one person. What I will say about this episode, too, is that it serves as like a nice microcosm for the season in several regards. And one of them is that even though we spoke previously about the casting and the fact that there are maybe a couple of also-rans, not to be confused with Kyung-rans, in terms of like, you know, people that aren't necessarily the top tier of genius players that get brought back, I think they really highlight that the fact that these people are going to have a significant impact on the season. Like, for example, Kyunghoon's going to have a big episode here with him essentially ruining things for himself. He goes against his words completely by running around to Sangmin and accidentally getting the convict card traded to him and almost screwing himself and Yuan over. But I mean, I know you guys really pointed out this really subtle move from Jungmoon near the end of the main match, where she gets the convict card and decides to lie about the fact that, like, oh yeah, it's a commoner card, here you go, Junghyun, because otherwise she would have gone into the death match. And so, like, you know, that was a really smooth move on her part. Junsuk's gonna go into the death match and end up, you know, really pulling out a victory against someone who has already played this game before. So these people are all gonna go on to do things. I know that, like, I think people might forsake Jungmoon a little bit, but I actually think she had a pretty big impact on the season in terms of, I think she really defied expectations going in. She was really able to sort of ride the middle. There aren't really like hard and fast alliances in this season, but I feel like she was really able to appease all sides. Junsak is going to defy expectations and make it all the way to six. So I think this is a nice representation of the fact that, like, these people that, you know, they're the big names on the season, but there are also these other people that are really going to have an impact on the way the season flows moving forward.
Yeah, and in an episode with so many crazy moments, that one scene with Jungmin is actually one of my favorites, because when there's so much insane stuff going on around them and everyone, including most of the viewers at this point, have forgotten that Jungmin even exists, suddenly she is thrust into the limelight and has to make this potentially game-ending decision if she's not able to maintain her poise and composure. And I like that you get to see how she operates when she's suddenly thrust into this moment of crisis where, like, the stakes go from, well, things are confusing, I'm not quite sure what's going on, to, if I get this wrong, my whole game just implodes and goes down the tubes. And I like that you get to see everyone become relevant, even if it's only just for a short period of time.
Right, like, to quickly just refresh it, at the end of the game, when Sangmin works that convict card back into the rotation, Jungmoon has just watched several people, I believe, use these shared cards to successfully gain points with each other, and then she goes up and swaps cards with Sangmin, and seemingly out of just thin air, looks down and sees the convict. I think most people in that spot would freak out, and she just calmly hands it back to Dongmin and says, this is a commoner, or whatever, this is a noble, or whatever it is. Like, I think if you don't handle yourself perfectly in that spot, you're going to find yourself just going to the deathmatch, and because she handles it the card gets handed off to Junghyun, and he goes in instead. And I don't think it's even that controversial to say, honestly, based on the people that I've talked to, that Jungmoon might be the least popular person from this cast. Is that ringing false to either of you?
No, completely. Because I think that even your Kyunghoons and your Junsak, so I would say that those are the three. Maybe you put Yuyun or lawyer Yunsun in there as well, in terms of, like, the four that people are saying, like, okay, I'm fine with bringing them back, but they didn't contribute as much as, you know, your Ah Young or your Hong Chuls. But I feel like, Dom, you brought up a great point. I completely agree with you that I think that each and every person in this cast really made their mark on the season, which to me is a great mark of a good season and a good mark of a great cast, where it's saying that, you know, sometimes with the reality TV cast, even in all-star seasons, you have people that didn't necessarily contribute that much to the main narrative, even though they might have done so in their previous seasons. But here, not only do you have the big names doing stuff, you also have those that might not necessarily have been the most popular coming in, also making their mark on the season. And so each and every person kind of has their moment in the sun a bit to really show why they're on the Genius in the first place.
Well, I think the Genius format also just is in general more favorable to getting the entire cast at least a little bit of airtime in any given week. But between the way that they enter the building, where they, you know, they each come in groups of one, two, or maybe sometimes three if there are still a lot of people, and you get a quick recap of what's been going on for each of them lately, and then also you can't be eliminated from the Genius without losing in a death match, which takes like 20 minutes at the end of the episode. Like, if someone's going to leave the show, they have to have contributed on that episode, at least that episode.
Yeah, that was a very good point. I think that, yeah, it's all about individual accountability, which I think is one of the other reasons why the Genius is such a great game too, and really makes for unpredictability. I mean, I think one of the big moments from the franchise is Jinho and Open Pass, and that's a moment where it's like, in any other game, it was essentially all on one, everyone against Jinho. And he'd have to win, you know, an individual immunity or a head of household to be able to do it. But Jinho was able to, like, basically set off on his own and do his own thing. And through the format of the Genius, he was able to really individually conquer the rest of the group just through the variability that comes with the games and the fact that at the end of the day, you go home because of your own set of individual skills.
Right. I think Open Pass is the definitive episode of what the Genius, I think, tries to pitch itself as, which is, even if the odds are as stacked against you as possible, even if your only ally is Kim Poong, Mike, and the other
glorious ally, a glorious ally.
The other group has five people and a way bigger bankroll to buy all these bonus packs. You can use your cunning and your intellect to overcome that and guarantee your own safety. And that's exactly what Jinho did. And I think that's why it's such that's why he's the icon of the Genius, I think, as they describe him when he's the first one to enter the building as the season one winner this episode. They say he's the Genius's icon. And I think that's right. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about just how this main match starts to play out, because we talk about unpredictability, but one interesting theme for a couple of people who just really, to me, never seem to find their footing on either of their seasons of The Genius is, as this big group is forming between the three winners who are then branching out and pulling in all of these various other people, we early on find this minority group also forming of Yeowon, Junsuk, Yoonsung, and Kyunghoon. And then while Junsuk and Yoonsung would get pulled over eventually, it really stood out to me, like Yeowon, back to exactly what Yeowon was up to in season two, of just completely incapable of getting much momentum going for his own side. What's going on with the Yeowon and Yoonsung group here and isolating themselves and playing from way behind yet again at the start of this fresh season?
I think Yeowon was waiting for his wife to really educate him as to how to handle The Genius season four. You have to wonder as well, this whole Jinho Yeowon thing. I know it's like playful, and now they've obviously played together on season two, but you have to wonder if there's still some sort of weird level of resentment there, where, like you said, there's going to be this big alliance where the winners do decide to work together for now. Sungmin pulls in Hyunmin. They decide to bring in Junghyun. Like, they're forming sort of like this onion-like alliance of amassing as many people as possible. And it's sort of, I guess they're sort of not necessarily picking the people that they want to work with, but basically the people that they don't want to work with.
Right, right. Yeowon is never in the group. He's never in 13 main matches. He's never in the group.
I love it. And Mike, you were talking about how this first episode serves as a microcosm for a lot of the wider themes of the season. I loved it so much that in Yeowon's introduction, after like the three winners enter to their signature music, and then Hyunmin comes in, and you have all of these iconic players, and then as soon as Yeowon comes in, no one takes him remotely seriously, and the music drops. You get that dopey music in the background, and it's so perfect for him.
Well, because let's also remember, like, yes, Yeowon had a really interesting pioneering strategy that actually, you know, leads to the Garnet matches twist this season.
It's a game changer.
Jinho exclaims, "Yeah, he's a game changer. He really is." This idea of, like, I wouldn't say it's coasting, but it's definitely capitalizing on this strategy of, like, look, if I don't win death match or if I don't win main matches, I'm not going to get garnets. I'm not going to be picked for this idea of, oh, he has garnets. Let's take him out. So I'm going to do pretty well for myself. And that's pretty much what helps get him to the final two. But I feel like if there's sort of like a meritocracy going on, this idea of, oh, we really pride people that are able to really crush in the main matches or in the death matches. If you then bring on somebody who made it to the final two by essentially saying it's my goal not to win any of the main matches, that almost lies completely perpendicular to your idea of evaluating what does a good genius player make.
Yeah, it's still up for debate how much of that was intentional, but that's the story we're going with. It was a master plan the whole time.
No, I think that, but like, Mike, what you're getting at is Yeowon capitalizing on the idea that, like, if I have no garnets, there's no upside in beating me in the death match, and I'm also revered as the Michael Jordan of StarCraft, which is this intense one-on-one strategy game. Like, there's no reason anyone would ever pick me to go to the death match, and only Lawyer Yoonsung ever did, and she got blown out in, like, five moves of laser chess.
Yeah, and I just think, and I'm not, like, crapping over his strategy at all. I think it's a fantastic strategy, because if the goal is to get one round further, this is an amazing way to really play that idea. It's just one of those things where, like if you watch on a show like Survivor or Big Brother, Godfrey Manguiza from Big Brother Canada 3 is a great example of this, of someone who we can see is playing a really surreptitious, underhanded strategy that works super well for him. This is another example of a guy who won a couple vetoes but didn't win an HOH until the final three. But when at the end of the day, his competitors are going to look back at him and say, like, I don't really respect the game that you're playing, because it might not have been as big and flashy as someone like Sarah Hanlon. This could be the case here as well, where, like, I totally appreciate Yeowon's strategy here. I think it's such a great way to look at the current game structure and say, how can I exploit it? At the same time, maybe those that were competing with him would look back and say, well, you didn't really do anything that important, so how can I respect you in that regard?
And I think the issue as well is it's a study in contrast. So for someone like Godfrey, or for others who maybe have played this conscious under-the-radar strategy, they're able to do that because no one is really expecting them to be at the forefront of the strategy in the first place. Whereas Yeowon coming in, we heard this guy was this StarCraft legend, this professional poker player. He's exactly the type of guy that people like us, like me and Colin, enjoy salivating over. And then we meet him for the first time, and he is just nothing like that at all. And it's so fun to see someone who is revered as this gaming legend, like the Emperor, go to the icon of civility as a flag up in his montage.
Right, like Dom and I have joked before, like, it's hard to picture Yohan being the greatest StarCraft player of all time. It's hard to picture him being great at, like, anything.
And that's not, that's not to bag on the guy.
Other than wife selection, obviously. Fantastic wife selection.
Yeah, and not to take anything away from him. He seems like a lovely guy, but his manner is so... Like, he seems more like a Jungian, not to take anything away from my boy, my angel. He seems more like a Jungian than like a Jinhe.
And yeah. He almost, again, going back to our point that we referenced a few minutes ago, he almost suffers for it here. And he also makes, again, the cardinal mistake of deciding to join up with Kyung-hoon, because Kyung-hoon unintentionally screws him over almost from the get-go in this main match.
Right. That's like the first big twist of the season is this minority alliance is doing a few trades, and Kyung-hoon, whose big master plan has been, okay, I drew a commoner, I'm not going to do anything, I'm just going to sit on this commoner. And Dongmin, who he has a secret alliance with, is like, don't do anything, just keep your commoner. He goes and makes a trade with Yohan, and Yohan looks down at the convict out of nowhere.
And a line that really stood out like a sore thumb on my rewatch earlier was Kyung-hoon says at some point, yeah, he says, I'll get rid of my traitor image through the season and try to become the icon of honesty. And the great thing about Kyung-hoon is I could equally believe that he is completely bullshitting to the camera at that point and he knows what he's planning to do, or that he sincerely means that and wants to change his ways, but he just doesn't have the self-control to actually do it. I think both are equally likely.
Can we get into that quickly? Do you think that... Because I have always operated under the assumption Kyung-hoon is being sincere.
Mm. Yeah, I think Kyung-hoon, it's a weird comparison. He reminds me of Jeff Varner in a way, just like no filter, no self-control, just like no... They're so restless, they can't just sit on their ass for 1 second.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, making the dog reference, considering K-Hound, but I mean, you really can't teach an old dog new tricks. And yeah. I feel like you see that across returning player seasons as well, as much as people come in and say, like, well, I'm going to play this game now. At the end of the day, as the game gets further, the pressure builds, you're going to end up relying on your own base mannerisms. And Kyung-hoon's clear base mannerism is to just be a tornado and just cause as much damage as possible while trying to basically pick up as much debris as he can.
Yeah. One thing I was actually, I wanted to ask about is once the players drew, they got to do a lot of strategizing before they drew their cards, but then immediately once they drew their cards, because these are smart people who've played the game before, they started trying to figure out what the trick was to the cards and like hold them up to the light and like look at them from all these different angles. Am I forgetting a bunch of things where that came into play this season? Because all I could think of is the horror race where Dongmin figured out the weight disparity, but that wasn't even intended, right?
Yeah, that was the big one that I was thinking of too. Shaking the disc to see which one weighed slightly more than the other ones.
But the producers didn't even intend for that to be some kind of trick to it. Were there any intentional kind of tricks to the games in that, to the props?
I don't think so. Maybe it was after it was the Constellation game where in the secret scene the producers revealed like, hey, there was a secret to this, but nobody got it.
Yeah.
Maybe they decided to sort of say like, okay, maybe we can roll back a little bit on this if people aren't getting it. Then...
Oh, no, I got one. Today's menu, the box, had a trick to it.
Yeah, I just...
Oh, right. Was it like the false bottom or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, you mean the focal point of one of the most significant episodes in the entire season. Yeah.
That's why I asked, because I couldn't think of any.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't jump in with it either, so fair play. But I like as well one thing that, so as this initial scheming is taking place, we have these infographics showing the alliances, showing the people who are on the fence. We have Kyung-hoon shown as, like, his icon is in between these two larger boxes representing the alliances with these question marks over him. And I was thinking, like, we could have done with that at various points on some recent Survivor seasons, just for the sake of clarity.
Yeah, great representation of voting blocks.
Yeah. Sorry, Mike. I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, I think that is a huge thing that the Genius has going for it, is they are willing to use these kind of infographics to make the game more clear. I think Survivor, in all seriousness, would benefit from that kind of thing in certain points in certain episodes.
Yeah, it might ruin the sense of immersion, but maybe that's worth it given how complicated the game is becoming, just so that the audience can absorb that more easily.
And it is interesting as well, going back to this idea of the two alliances, as you mentioned, and it's actually very comparable to Food Chain, and it ends up working to, you know, Hui Zhang's detriment, where he makes this alliance with people before they even draw cards. And once they realize, like, oh, we have a pretty good draw, but it ends up kind of screwing him over at the end of the day, because then he says, oh, you know, I can't really eat any of my allies. What the heck am I going to do? I guess I'm going to starve to death. You know, I feel like here, again, since these are returning players, they have these, it's basically three coalitions from the beginning before they draw the cards. But once they do, then they start to rejigger things a little bit. And that's when Hyunrin comes up with this idea of like, hey, now that we know that Yeolan has the convict card, let's basically have everyone segregate themselves from the two of them. Since Kyung-hoon and Yeolan have already made a trade, they can't trade with each other again. Yeolan would then have the convict card, so he'd go to the death match. And since Hyunrin could orchestrate an 11-person win, an unprecedented number on the genius, then Kyung-hoon would be, by default, the only other person to pick.
Right, and this is incredible to see. At least as it's presented, Hyunmin comes up with this plan like in real time as he's giving a confessional, thinking about the state of the game and like what they would need to make happen and who has what card. And I also thought it was, we kind of skipped over it, but it's worth mentioning that when Sangmin, who drew the convict initially, and he was the one who made an unofficial trade with Kyung-hoon to put it in Kyung-hoon's hands to give it to Yeowon, Sangmin drew the convict, and then his first plan was, I'm going to go pull Hyunmin aside and figure out what Hyunmin thinks people should do with the convict. And he immediately tells Hyunmin, I got the convict, keep this to yourself, it's you and me, what do we do with this, how do we make this work for us. I had already mentioned earlier in this podcast, Hyunmin was like our consensus favorite to entering the season to be like the eventual winner and the person we thought could contend with Sangmin to be like maybe the greatest genius player in history. I think this is a perfectly like indicative scene of Hyunmin as well, if we want to talk about how Kyung-hoon is doing such blatant Kyung-hoon behavior. And I'm sure we'll get on to Dongmin and how he, you know, by the end of this, everyone's doing what he's telling them. I think this is perfect Hyunmin stuff as well, where he's just off by himself doing the calculations. And it's so clear to everyone, even though he's only 20 years old and age is still such a huge deal to them, this is the most capable person at this kind of stuff.
And I think it's also very interesting. I know you were speaking before about, you know, Kyung-hoon going to four death matches. Hyunmin's not going to win, but he's going to be given immunity in this episode. It's really interesting looking back. Of the 11 rounds of the genius, Hyunmin was safe for 7 of them. That's ridiculous. You know, four were by win, 3 were purely given to him. And I think it shows that, you know, Hyunmin might not necessarily have had the best reputation as like someone who's completely loyal in season 3, considering that it was like him and Dongmin for a little while sort of like betraying their allies almost and sort of striking out on their own, much to the consternation of everyone else. But Hyunmin really proves from the beginning here that he is sort of, you know, if you have him in your group, he's going to work for you. He's very diligent. And I think that shows in that like the people who were going to reward Hyunmin by giving him immunity and saying, Sangmin does this episode, I feel bad because you really helped orchestrate this 11-person win that I completely ruined. Let me give you safety. At the end of the day, safety is safety, no matter what you had to do to get it.
Right, and it's also, I think, an effort on the part of whoever's handing him the token of life to be saying, it probably can't hurt my standing with him next round by giving him this token of life, because if I don't give it to him, he's still going to be there anyway, and I'd like to be on as good of terms as possible with him so I have as good of a chance next week at getting this token of life again. Because he's going to be the favorite on like any given, mm-hmm. you know, entering any given round. Yes, so that I thought was really interesting. So I guess let's get just into who has the convict now. Yeolan has the convict. He gives it back to Kyung-hoon. What did you make of that? Of just Kyung-hoon? That's why I think I've always have felt like Kyung-hoon's just being sincere. It really does seem like he acts emotionally first and then decides, you know, at least at this point still in the season, to go logically. Did you think there was anything to the idea that he should just stick Yeolan with the card? Because it seems like everyone else is icing out Yeolan here. I don't know. What did you make of Kyung-hoon wanting to take this back?
I mean, I think it goes back to what we were talking about with him being like, you know, Dom points out his ironic comment and saying, I really want to be honest here. I'm with you guys in that I think Kyung-hoon was sincere, and I think we really are seeing him just waver back and forth where, like, you know, I think that one of the reasons why he traded with Yeowon is because he said, you know, I wanted to get this card from Sangmin because I had a commoner and I wanted to get a point. And then once he realized that he screwed him over, he was like, oh no, what is this going to say about my reputation? Here, I'll make it up to you. Give me the card back. And then once he stares at it, he realizes like, oh crap, I have a card now. I could be going to the death match. I don't think it's really anything outside of that. I don't think there's any sort of larger metagame. I honestly do feel like he just felt bad for what he did, and to sort of again go into this new clean reputation that he wants to burgeon for himself. As a result, he decides to take the burden on, and then quickly realizes like, oh wait, this means that I could be first out on this season.
I
was going to say, I love that Kyung-hoon is the one who comes up with maybe the actual best strategy for most people in the game, which is to just stay put, rest on the card you have, and not get into any trouble. And then he's the one to maybe validate his own strategy by making this trade with Simon that ends up ruining everything for everyone, including himself. But I wanted to come back to that moment where we have the big reveal that Yeo-wan has the combat card now. Because for me, so obviously so much excitement coming into this episode. The opening montage was great. Just jazz seeing all of my favorite players interacting on the screen together. Like, we get Sangmin talking to Hyunmin and just all these conversations left and right. But up until this point, the game itself was fairly, you know, it was fine, it was interesting, but it was coasting along on that buzz. I think this was the first time where we really had a definitive moment of the genius grand final of like, this is real now, this is happening. Like, when Yeo-wan sees the card, the music drops, we cut to Yeo-wan, and then we cut to Sangmin just like walking away towards the camera. Like, that's what really confirmed for me that like, this is actually happening, and this is going to be a wild ride for the rest of the season.
I think that you guys pointed this out on your podcast, but I know you said at the very beginning, Colin, that Kyung-hoon winning would show that the genius was scripted, but I feel like there are breadcrumbs there of Sangmin getting the convict card, because it's again like Sangmin getting the snake in food chain. Like, these draws work out suspiciously well for Sangmin in terms of giving the most entertaining player the most entertaining permutation.
I wanted to ask you that, actually. So how do you think this game plays out differently if, just to throw a few names out there, like Kyung-ran or, I don't know, Jung-yun or anyone else ends up with a combat card initially? Because I can imagine the whole thing ends up looking very different.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if I can really cast a blanket statement on that, but I think, as you're sort of alluding to, it really depends on the personality type. Like, I love Jung-hyun as much as you do, Dom, but I don't know if he has as much tact as someone like Sangmin to navigate, you know, surreptitiously slipping someone the card. Maybe if he keeps it in, like, the pocket of one of his fantastic pink sweater and decides to, you know, use it as a distraction or something.
When Jung-hyun enters, his tagline that they used to hype him up was the veteran fighting spirit that comes to life like a phoenix, which I don't think was on display at any point in season two, and and really not at any point here either. So like, the one time where he really comes into his own this episode is when Sangmin tells him, like, has to educate him, like, no, you have the convict card, like I need to walk you through all of this, and then he just kind of accepts it, really. It's like, yeah, fair enough. You can't really do anything about it.
I mean, it's an interesting question, though, because I feel like, I wonder, even though it's a returning player game, it's sort of like, who wants to rock the boat first? You know, it's everyone with their guns drawn in a 13-person standoff saying, the first person who shoots, that's when the big gunfire starts. And I wonder, even if you put it in the hands of someone like Jin-ho or Dong-min, someone who's shown to be a little more wily than Kyung-ran or Jung-hyun, as you just mentioned, I do wonder if they're going to be, because I mean, we're not done with Sangmin in this main match after he trades cards with Kyung-hoon, because then he's going to be the one to basically dictate the entire second half of this main match by creating the distraction of Jun-suk in order to get the combat card back in order to try to screw Jung-moon over.
Yeah, so one question that I wanted to ask you is that we've spoken a lot in the context of Survivor Game Changers about how the most recent seasons of Survivor have been very rapidly evolving, very aggressive style of gameplay, and that's almost been rolled back a bit. Now it's like the clock is ticked over and we're now going through the cycle again to now where things are more slower, people are taking more time, we have these more traditional alliances forming. What do you make of the way that the genius kind of change over time? Because you would expect coming in there's going to be this just absolutely insane gameplay right at the bat, and that's exactly what we see. But at the same time, as the season goes on, we do see the same people working together, and it is just Dong-min at the head of this large alliance doing the same thing as he did last time, shepherding everyone towards the end.
Well, I think that the interesting thing about reality TV alliances are that they're often associated around an event. I'm thinking about like the friendship in Big Brother 6. Had Cappy not gone home week 3, I feel like the friendship would not have been as tight as they were. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is sort of the case here in The Genius Four, where when you have Sangmin going home in episode three, I actually think, you know, I was on the next episode after that, and I think we refer to that alliance as like the friends of Sangmin, you know, Dongmin, Kyungran, Jinho, and Hyunmin. And like you said, Dom, they're pretty much going to work together every single game from here on out. And so it really is interesting thinking about, like, you know, we have in season one, you have this initial alliance of Pung and Sangmin and Gura that ends up kind of being systematically dismantled as the season goes along. But now we've sort of gotten to the point where this bigger alliance really tries to go through as a coalition and kind of stampede through everybody. But I wonder, again, if that's just associated with the fact that Sangmin went out early. I mean, Sangmin going out early, if we're going down that rabbit hole, would lead to so many other possibilities in all the games throughout the rest of the season. But one of the unintended consequences is that it really unified that group and made them more of a cohesive block moving forward.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, if maybe they would have been even tighter if Sangmin had stuck around.
Interesting. Well, I don't know, because I mean, like, maybe Sangmin, I mean, Sangmin himself is sort of an agent of chaos.
The answer is certainly maybe not. They seem to be quite fed up with him even through three episodes, or at least until near the end, when Dongmin seemed willing to, like, bail him out in today's menu.
And also, like, you know, him and Jinho, even though they're friends, I feel like they have, you know, a little bit of a tift going on as well. It could have been very possible that, like, if you have this five-person alliance, you have Jinho and Kyungran on one side, Dongmin and Hyunmin on the other side, and then Sangmin's sort of like in the middle there. And it seems like even from this episode, Sangmin's totally fine striking off on his own and making a deal with someone from the quote-unquote opposite alliance. So there's so much that could happen in this game if Sangmin decided to stay in. I personally don't think that alliance would be as stable if he was still in the game. But because he left so early on and that was such a traumatic event for that alliance, they basically all say, like, hey, we're going to stick together now. Let's work together and see if we can take out the rest.
On my rewatch, I was very consciously looking out for the flash forwards, because they do such a good job of calibrating your expectations and guiding you towards, like, hoping and expecting for a certain outcome, only to then, you know, pull the curtain back and show you what's actually going on. But by the time you actually get to that reveal, you've forgotten most of the details of the flash forward. So unless you go back and rewatch it again, it's kind of served its purpose and it's in the distant past. So I was excited to see just how they go about accomplishing that and setting up for this massive reveal towards the end of this episode. And it's really ingenious how they do it. So they show Sangmin just despondent in the corner, and you don't know if he's being caught with his hand in the cookie jar in typical Sangmin fashion, or maybe he's been screwed over somehow. And you begin to think that poor Sangmin was stuck with a convict card and everyone is being selfish and hanging him out to dry. And so when it turns out that actually none of that is true and Sangmin is just being Sangmin, somehow it almost seems surprising, even though it absolutely shouldn't in any respect.
Yeah, that's actually something that's what I meant to bring up earlier and forgot, is this flash forward. While we have a lot of, you know, a big group coming together, we still have been shown a couple of times somehow this is going to go haywire and Jinho is going to, you know, throw his legal pad on the floor and Sangmin's going to look all despondent. And I think, Dom, you're right and the flash forwards often do, I think, a great job at keeping me interested in a main match that looks like it should be pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and with that, so even absent the flash forwards, you would expect that the human's amazing 11-person scheme to get a joint win, if he can pull it off, that's amazing, and that's a great moment in itself. But you know that there's going to be a snag somewhere. Something is going to, there's going to be some place where the carpet's raised, and then you're never going to be able to squash that down. And seeing how all of that unravels is going to be exciting in its own right. But you don't quite know what that's going to be. And your first instinct, if you know anything about Lee Sangmin, is obviously it's going to be Sangmin. But the flash forward does a good job of maybe instilling some kind of doubt in you there.
Yeah, that's a great point in that, like, as a human lover, I love this idea of, like, oh, wow, he can really orchestrate. And, we've had, like, the zombie game, they orchestrated a five-person win, and they're going to have, like, the Garnet Thief game. They're going to, later on in the season, they're going to orchestrate a five-person win. So I think
that one's insane. That's the sickest joint win that I've ever seen. That's unreal.
And it has one of, like, the best reveals ever.
Yeah, it's great. Just,
like, how everything happened.
It's like a 10-minute reveal about how they did all of it.
And I love that as well. And that's what, again, like, we all, I think, really laud the genius for this really editing style throughout the course of its four seasons of, you know, Fish Shop is a great example of this as well, where we see these factions break out, but we pretty much only see the friends of Sangmin, what their strategy is. Then once the first fish prices come in, they suddenly realize that they're screwed, and then we flash back, and that's another like 10 minutes of coverage of like, this is what Yoo-yeon and Kyung-hoon did, or what Dr. Yoon-sung did. And I love just that type of storytelling. I'm surprising us and having us along for the ride as well, as opposed to maybe taking the more objective viewpoints of now you need to know everything that's going on at every point in time. But going back to what you were saying before, I mean, yeah, this 11-person joint win idea is too good to be true. I think, you know, one of the reasons why you say, like, the Tandang tribe coming into Survivor Philippines, they were fractured to begin with, because, you know, I think when you have such a large alliance, it can get a little unruly. People will realize that they're on the bottom, and so they're going to be more likely to hop over and make give themselves a better position. And we see it right here where they're very wary of bringing Junsuk in. And so when they say, okay, our plan is to give everyone 4 wins, let's give Junsuk 4 wins first, that's going to cause its own level of mayhem in that, you know, Junsuk is then going to sort of strike out on his own and realize, oh, I can get my own win here. And as a result, he is one of the people, along with Sangmin, without even realizing it, who completely derails this 11-person joint win plan.
Yeah, and Mike, thinking back to when I talked to you on here about Fish Shop, if we were ranking the best genius moments, which is maybe a good podcast idea in itself, Fish Shop is up there for me because we have this idea of Heung-min as someone who is just on another level strategically, that maybe some other people are slightly better socially or some other aspects of the matches, but just in terms of raw calculation and just being mentally agile, Heung-min has them all beat to a certain point. And it's amazing just seeing these players who I think we as the audience had written off, and who it seemed like Heung-min had written off as well, not only come up with the same idea with him, but implement it better to the point where it boxes him out, and then also go one step further and come up with these higher level ideas that just trump anything that he's doing at the same time. And you can see in the Fish Shop reveal on Heung-min's face, it wasn't just, oh, I've lost this main match and I could be going to the deathmatch. It's, how did I get just outfoxed by all of these people at the same time?
Right. Mm-hmm. The Fish Shop episode, they spend the entirety of the main match presenting it as if Heung-min is the one with the master plan, and he's going, you know, he and Dongmin are going to snipe everyone early and then freeze them out. And then it's not until we see the final results that the voiceover even hints at these other two pairs that form between Junsuk and Dr. Yoon-sung, and then Yoo-yeon and Kyung-hoon were doing the exact same thing, the dollar throughout strategy. And it's in fact Heung-min who's been the hero of the last season and a third or so, or one of the heroes, and certainly one of the brightest people, who's been totally outfoxed here. And I think, Dom, not just that episode, but the one particular moment for me is, and I really hope this was deliberate, how they had them standing. Junsuk and Dr. Yoon-sung, yeah, they are right on either side of Heung-min, and they high five right over his head.
It's
when
so perfect.
It's
so
incredible.
Good.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. I mean, that was, I'm so lucky that I got to not only come on with you guys to just talk about the genius, but talk about that episode in particular, because yeah, I think I said that exact same thing on the podcast, Tom, about this idea that one of the reasons why I love this episode is because, again, you think going into this season, you know, when you guys were doing your auction draft, when you were doing your just general like cast assessment beforehand, you were saying like, okay, there's probably like 3, 4, maybe 5 people I could see realistically win this. And I don't think you include those people in there. They might be like in the second tier, but then these people come out of nowhere, take on the big dogs and end up winning. And that they say, yeah, you know what? We can play your game better than you can.
Yeah, and I thought that this Junsuk move where he gets his 4 points and then takes the community commoner card with him, now that he's recognizes, oh, I could go and talk to Kyung-hoon and get myself a soul win here. I thought this was like the big suspense that we were all leading up to with the flash forward, and like that this was going to be the big uncertainty about this group win. And it's like, oh, Junsuk is going to kind of throw a wrench into this. And I think this is another instance of the genius doing a phenomenal job, kind of giving it's almost like a red herring reveal, where it's like you think that this is the big chaos they were building up to, and it was like this is what the clips were from, of everyone reacting to Junsuk taking the card, but we still have this, you know, level 11 reveal yet to come. And I think that's so what makes this so fun on a rewatch, knowing that that's still out there.
Yeah, so crossing the streams again with Survivor, we were making the comparisons before either of them actually came back to play again, that Sangmin was very Tony-esque in certain respects, and now that we've got to see Sangmin play again and flame out in dramatic fashion, and Tony play again and flame out in maybe not such dramatic fashion, but still, you know, way before his time, those comparisons look even more apt now in retrospect.
Yeah, and I would also make the comparison, this is going to be, I don't know if this will play on either one of your heads, but maybe some to the audience out there. Sangmin in this season also reminds me a little bit of Robin Amber on The Amazing Race All-Stars, where I don't think they were as chaotic as either Sangmin or Tony, but I think they were very well known for, like, implementing new strategies. They, for example, said, you know what? I don't want to do this roadblock. I know it's a 4-hour penalty. Let me convince like 2 or 3 other people to quit along with me so I can still be ahead even when the time penalty happens, which was an insane strategy at the time and really changed how, you know, the strategic game of The Amazing Race is played. They came in first every single leg until they were eliminated in leg 4. Sangmin here is going to win this match, win the next match, and go home the match after that. So I'm going to throw in another comparison there.
That's a deep cut. That's impressive.
Yeah, Boston Rob and Amber. Who's ever heard of them?
Never. Yeah, 2004.
Yeah, no, that is a great cut. And I think Sangmin, like, maybe Tony, because of just the, like, flashiness that they both play with, is such an obvious comparison. But I really do think there is a lot of Boston Rob and Sangmin, too.
Yeah, I think he's able to. I know Dongmin is sort of going to utilize like the Boston Rob in Redemption Island strategy of like, let's keep people loyal, let's keep people together. But Sangmin shows like almost Boston Rob and All Stars mentality of like, listen, I'm out for me. I'm willing to like make bonds with people and then break them in order to get ahead in the game and then sort of come in at the end with my hat in my hand. Now, granted, it works out better for Sangmin in his second season in season 2 than it does for Rob in Survivor All-Stars, but I think it's a very similar mentality.
Yeah. So let's get into this big reveal now at the end of the episode. After all of this chaos has gone down with Junsak, there's only 7 minutes left for everyone to even out their points. But it's okay because we found a new commoner card. And after a few trades go down, it's time for Sangmin to trade with Jungmoon. She then hands it back over to Dongmin. Now it's time for Sangmin to trade with Junghyun yet again. And with 45 seconds left, Sangmin is no longer interested in going into the trade, into like the dealer booth, and he doesn't want to go trade with Junghyun, and everyone's like, what are you doing? What's going on? He pulls Junghyun aside, and Junghyun speculates, oh, he doesn't want to give me the convict. He feels so bad. And Sangmin, with the iconic, Hyung, it's the opposite. Where Junghyun is the one who has the convict now.
Oh, it was such an amazing reveal, because again, I was totally along for the ride of like, obviously, if you didn't know the results of, at the time I watched it, of Junghyun, like, oh, he can be perceptive sometimes. He's picked up that he has the convict card and he feels bad for me. And Sangmin, you know, almost like pile drives him into a corner to sort of say to him, like, no, actually, you have it. I don't want it. It's just so typical Sangmin that it's a combination of like incredible television combined with such an underhanded strategy. And then we get our other big flashback moment of the episode where we find out that Sangmin purposely seemed to have caused sort of the Junsak distraction, or at least take advantage of it, by pulling Kyunghoon aside while everyone was literally chasing after Junsak with the card to tell him, like, listen, switch cards with me. And this is what led him to, you know, I'm trying to think about whether or not he intended for the card to go to Junghyun, or if he just wanted to sort of like, I don't know if he was specifically targeting Jungmoon, or if he was just like, let me give the convict card away so I can get the points. And his friend happened to get caught in the crossfire.
I think it was the latter. I don't think he intended for it to be specifically Junghyun. I think that would have been one of the last people he would want it to be. And maybe it was specifically Jungmoon. But yeah, I definitely don't think it was Junghyun that he was like targeting.
Yeah, I think when we initially talked about it, we were assuming he was actively targeting Jungmoon. Watching it back, I didn't get quite the same sense. I thought it was just, I'm going to put this card out there, and if it ends up detonating, you know, whoever is holding the hot potato at the end is going to get screwed over. And obviously, he would rather that not be Hyunmin, let's say, or someone he actually intends to work with. But I think Jungmin was someone he would quite happily have seen take the brunt of that, and maybe Jungmin as a loyal ally would not have been. But it's an amazing scene, because you see Sangmin almost manhandle him away from the rest of the cast as he kind of breaks the news. And you see Junghyun think that he has it figured out before everyone else as to why Sangmin's not doing this. And then it quickly dawns on him as Sangmin, you see Sangmin's expression change. And it's like triumphal and grimacing at the same time. It's really weird when you go back and rewatch it. And he has to break the news. Like, it's the exact opposite of what you're thinking. Like, you don't feel any sympathy for me here, because it's you're the one who's going to be needing it.
Yeah. I'm wondering, why do we think Sangmin did this? Because what he ended up doing is Kyung-hoon just was in a room by himself pretending that he was holding onto the convict the whole time after having given it to Sangmin. And Sangmin was just walking around with an extra card with the convict in his back pocket, waiting for the last few minutes to put it back out there and get those last 3 points and get the sole win. Do you think he did this to help Kyung-hoon, or just for good TV, or what? Because it seems like he had total trust from 11 people and he blew all of it to help Kyung-hoon.
And he even acknowledges that. I think this also goes back to this sort of adage that we gave to Kyung-hoon of, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Sangmin is also someone who, like, he's done it a couple times. You know, I think he does cooperate during the zombie game, for example, but I don't know if he's necessarily the person, especially nowadays, to be like, well, yep, I'll be good with an 11-person win. But I feel like it comes down to a couple things. Sangmin even vocalizes it, saying that, one, he didn't want to leave Kyung-hoon alone. Maybe this is sort of the case where, like, a good strategist recognizes a possible number you can pick up. This is where we start to see the inklings of the Sangmin-Kyung-hoon alliance. It's actually going to end up screwing Sangmin over in a couple of episodes. But he also says that he didn't want to have a Jung-sok pulling something out and pulling out the sole win. And so maybe this also comes down to Sangmin's kind of bloodthirstiness and wanting to win the main match himself. Him saying, like, you think you're trying to outgame us? Let me bring things one level higher and use you as a distractor in order to get one over on you at the end of the day.
But by the way, it's still amazing to me how Jung-hyun's diagnosis for why Sangmin is refusing to move is that he has the convict card and he feels sorry. He doesn't want to land anyone else with it. And it's... if you knew anything at all about Sangmin, then that's a pretty bad way to go. But you played an entire season of The Genius directly alongside Sangmin. Like, how can you possibly reach that conclusion anymore?
Yeah, no, I think the one conclusion you can reach is the only card he cannot have is the convict.
Right.
I don't know. It was a couple of years ago. I don't know. Jung-hyun might have been distracted by other things.
So, yeah, Jung-hyun, unfortunately, Dom, your boy is going to be the one with the hot potato at the end of this main match, and he now has a decision about who he's going to be picking to bring with him into the death match. He ends up landing on Jun-sok. We had speculated about maybe he thinks Jun-sok is going to have some nerves about being the first boot yet again. Mike, what do you think went into this decision to pick Jun-sok as his opponent? Because it seems like he's a pretty smart guy in general.
I mean, we were sort of attributing this to Kyung-hoon before, but I feel like Jung-hyun also has his own sort of levels of emotional gameplay, too. Let's remember back when Jun-sok decided to really pull this move of, like, hey, I'm going to walk around with the commoner card and, you know, be able to get 4 points for himself. And even earlier before that, you know, they ask him, okay, Jun-sok, it's your turn to trade. And he's like, I don't know. He feels a little cagey about everything. Let's remember, Jung-hyun is actually one of the most vocal against Jun-sok. He's saying, like, why are you acting like this? Stop it. You're acting childish. And so I guess it makes sense. I guess you could almost argue it's out of spite in a weird way, considering that Jung-hyun is sort of like the Mr. Rogers of The Genius. It's weird to sort of equate that with spite. But I think it might be Jung-hyun essentially saying, like, hey, you tried to strike out on your own and really, like, pull off this big move, and you failed at it. Now you're going to pay for it tenfold.
Yeah, and we do have that scene when Jun-sok is holding the card saying, hey, anyone could, you know, if I let everyone get 4 points, then anyone could do this and we'd all be screwed. And it really was Jung-hyun who was there saying, look, if anyone is that courageous as to go and get a joint, you know, break up this joint win in exchange for a solo victory by colluding with Kyung-hoon, they're just going to die for sure the next round. And Jun-sok says, hey, man, that's not necessarily the case. I want to just quickly sidebar into Jun-sok and bringing him back. I know we talked a little bit about bringing back some of the non, you know, superstars, but bringing back literally the first person who was eliminated from the first season. I know we talked about liking this casting choice in the moment, but I think this is a perfect indicator of why. Like, having this guy who I think, not just among The Genius, but among, like, all of reality TV, might be, like, the most, like, ruthlessly self-interested and, like, open about it contestant that we've ever had.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, what is it? It's like the scorpion and the crocodile. that story about how, like, at the end of the fable, the scorpion stings the crocodile. He says, like, look, I'm just being me. And you have to wonder if, like, Junsuk almost has an inherent advantage of that, because you would think, sort of like what Jung-hun is alluding to, that even after this episode, he would be, like, public enemy number one for being so, for lack of a better term, selfish and striking out on his own to, you know, belittle the wants of the community at large. But the fact is, he's going to make it all the way to fifth place, and he gets immunity once, and he wins one main match, and that's basically it. And so I think it really shows that, like, yes, he really has this cutthroat strategy. I think if we're going back to, like, our reality TV casting examples, he would definitely be, like, the person that the producers would say, like, hey, they didn't make it far at all, but I feel like they have a lot of potential, and so I want to bring them back. And even though, again, he doesn't go the distance, he definitely makes a name for himself in this season.
Right. Yeah, by the way, I choose to believe that Jung-yoon picked him because he is in tune with what the viewers want, and he knows the only way to cap off an incredible premiere is for Junsuk to get Francesca'd. So as for whether it's a good idea to bring him back, I think it is. Like, I was a bit skeptical at first, but I think he more than proved his worth. And there's a definite sense that, like, he knows coming in that he feels that he got screwed over. He didn't get to show his full potential. And also that some of the viewers will have these questions of, does he really deserve to be there? Like, there are so many all-stars and you have this first boot from the first season and I don't even remember who he is. He really wants to prove himself. He wants to escape from that shadow. And so you're going to see stuff like we saw in the first episode, which maybe isn't the smartest in purely gameplay terms, but it's fantastic TV, and it's a big fuck you to everyone else in that cast who underestimated him and everyone else watching who didn't think he was capable of that.
Right. I think the big question marks for a lot of people were Junsuk and Kyung-hoon, and for me, they both in this premiere alone earned, you know, validated the producers giving them spots on this season. Junsuk, as soon as he pulled that card and said not so fast in that kind of setting where 10 other people were so certain it was going to be this joint win, that was good enough for me to, I was like, yes, that is the exact kind of agent of chaos I want on this season.
This episode is great not just because it's Sangmin pulling a classic Sangmin heist on everyone, which would be great, amazing enough by itself, but it's the two people who no one else really expected to be there, the two people that everyone kind of underestimated, who end up really stealing the show and forcing their own way into the narrative and making it all about themselves. Like, you see Dongmin, who is, as we said, one of the best just reality TV players in general of all time. You see Sangmin, who is incredibly, amazingly talented. But ultimately, it's Junsuk and Kyung-hoon who have everyone just begging them to go along with the plan. And it's amazing to watch them just seize control of everything in that one moment.
And that's the great conceit about the genius in general, is that since the games have so much variance where you can work in two teams that are predetermined, or you could work with your own alliances, or you're working by yourself, it gives you these moments to really have peak moments where specific people can shine. So, like, this is a great, I mean, Kyung-hoon's going to have a lot more moments throughout the course of this season for him to individually shine, but I think this is a great example, as you just mentioned, of Junsuk, where he's able to say, like, oh, I can use this game to really show my entertainment value.
I want to transition a little bit into, before we get into the death match, just quickly about the main match, just kind of the games in general, because you raised the point that we had the friends of Sangmin working together a lot, and I think it was often because there weren't many kind of character draw games in the same vein as, like, a Food Chain or a Layoff game or a Fruit Stand or whatever, or Zombie game or Loyalist. The one we got this season was Loyalists and Rebels, and that one wasn't too exciting, as we all know. And so there were a lot more games that people could just kind of work with whomever they really wanted. Like in something like Seed Poker or in Garnet Thief, you really are free to pick your own teams. And then at a certain point, you just hit basically individual games there. What did you think about not only the lack of kind of character draw games that kind of force you into teams, or like a minor game where you randomly draw the group that you're going to be picking the bombs out or your minerals out with? I think this season, for me at least, needed more of that, and potentially more kind of betting games, like a stormy stock market, where even if you are working as a team, you can't win together. It's just impossible.
It's a good point. I feel like it might be the show granting a little less hand-holding to the contestants. You know, okay. I think that Fruit Stand is a great example of an introductory game for a season saying, like, hey, you're going to be put in these groups depending on fruit. You can work with them however you want to. This is how you get the genius game. But once we get here, everyone sort of knows the score. And so I think the producers might be less reliant on these games that are saying, like, hey, like, here's a push in a direction to work with somebody. Instead, they're sort of saying, hey, you get free reign to basically work with whoever you want, with the exception of something like Loyalists and Rebels, as you just mentioned. I think one of the externalities of that, as you also just talked about, is the fact that people will tend to work together with each other more often. You know, they'll want to gravitate towards those that they're most loyal to. So as a result, I think you get less variance in terms of coalitions than you would if there were a couple of games thrown in there where, you know, even something like, I don't want to drop a middle race reference considering that how much of a polarizing game
trigger warning.
Exactly how much of a polarizing game it is for people. But that's another example of, like, you could totally make an alliance with a group, but then you all draw positions that really don't work well with each other. So now you sort of have to look to the outside and say, okay, who do I have to work with now in order to better my own individual game?
Yeah. Dom, did you have any takes on that? Did you feel like they did a good mix of game kind of design this season, or was it a little predictable for you?
Kind of. I do see what you're saying, that there could have been some more individual games. So the thing is, though, I wonder if, at some points, you know, Dongmin and other people had such a stronghold over the rest of the cast that even in those more individual games, they would have just gone along with whatever the majority plan was anyway.
Give me something like an open pass then, or something where sure. You can even work in your groups, but you can't get the same results.
Yeah, and I think Fish Shop was maybe the perfect example of that, right? Like, that's maybe more Fish Shops and fewer. I didn't even know which game we're going to throw under the bus here, but I do think a little bit more variety would have helped. I think the games that really suffered were, like, I think Seed Poker was just not a great game. And I think we said this at the time. It's like, who was really excited to watch Seed Poker? Even the people who understand it fully, which I confess I didn't at the time and probably still wouldn't today. It's just not really, it doesn't energize you in the same way that some of these other games do. It doesn't get you thinking about all of these different possibilities.
I think table games in general, when they're all gathered around a table, tend to not be that exciting versus when they're all out and about and moving around and going from room to room.
And that's why if you do have a table game, I think it helps if the structure of that game really is conducive to arguments or negotiations it gets people talking and debating. Whereas some of these table games, it's okay, it's you have as much of that as you'd expect from a typical poker game, but it's not, there's no like one singular moment that all of this is building towards. The same way that there might have been in some of the auctions, for instance, where like there's one crucial tile that comes out, or there's one, you know, someone promises not to bid on something and then they bid on it. You don't really get that in the same way.
Yeah. We're gonna have Horror Race repeated as like our requisite repeat game, both in the beginning and end of this season. Did you guys like the? I remember you not being too high on Horror Race starting out. And you know, I at the end of the season, I made like a list of my episode rankings, and I'm pretty sure both Horror Races ended up definitely in the bottom half. Did you guys feel like there was another game that they could have repeated later on, whether with guests or without?
I mean, something like I don't know how you would make Garnet Thief work with you know, five people versus with the eight that they played it with, or with four, I guess. But I feel like something like that, where there are a lot more permutations. And I like Horror Race is just, first of all, not that TV friendly, except like the physical comedy of people like reaching into that giant orb to grab their things. That's funny every single time. But I felt like it wasn't just the most, I feel like it's always the races they repeated, right? It would be the scamming horse race. I guess the second one was the food chain kind of layoff game. And then it was middle race that they did twice and Genius 3 and now Horror Race. I feel like in all of those instances, they could have picked better games to repeat.
Yeah, I wonder if, and this is a point which we plan to talk about in a future episode, but I think the contrast between Food Chain and the Layoff game is really illustrative here, because with the Layoff game, it wasn't really intuitive in the same way. Like the flavor didn't connect to the mechanics of the game. So you have, oh, one person is a high-ranking executive, or this person's in sales, whereas this person's in something else. It doesn't connect the same way that, oh, if I'm a, you know, if I'm an eagle, I can fly over and escape the alligator, but you know the rabbit's going to get eaten pretty quickly, right? Like that makes more intuitive sense than. And that helps to understand it, which that game, you really need the help to understand it. It's not the best one for easing you into the season.
Although now that I'm thinking about what Mike's actual question was of which game would you repeat instead, I'm not sure which you could repeat instead of Horror Race.
Yeah, I mean, unless they decide to, you know, they did like a take on the minus auction again. I wonder if they could again say, like, let's take another previous game from a previous season and slot it in instead of saying, like, remember how great Horror Race was? Let's repeat it all over again, but throw in these right. extra variables.
I definitely would have been up for minus auction 3 instead of Horror Race 2. But I love the minus auction. Yeah, and actually, as we kind of transition into this deathmatch, they're playing black and white, not betting black and white, but a question we got, Mike, from your good friend and ours, Antonio Mazzaro, that I couldn't find a better spot for in this show. As someone who, you being someone who doesn't dabble in as many like betting games as Dom and I do the betting games on the Genius maybe not resonate as well? Like, they're not as interesting as they may be to the two of us, and do you potentially prefer the strategy games that don't include the betting?
I mean, that's, yeah, I think personally, just because, I mean, I am also not a strategic minded person in general. The shows that I do like, you know, I like more so character and narrative based moments more so than I like strategic moments, just because I'm not a smart person. And so, you know, I'm not constantly thinking about the possible permutations that might happen like you guys are able to do. And so I feel like betting games for me almost puts another layer on top that almost confounds me even more, as weird as that is to say, which is why, you know, as Antonio sort of alluded to here, you know, I'm not a gambler. I dabbled in poker briefly when I was in high school, but that was among like 5 people. And I played a little bit of online poker before that became illegal when I was like 16 years old. But otherwise, I don't really delve much into like the strategic betting portion. I would actually say that as simple as black and white really works as a game, I'm a little disappointed we didn't go with black and white 2. I might be in the minority, but I actually really liked black and white 2 more than black and white in season 3, just because I feel like it complicates things a little bit further, and you want to feel like, okay, this is an all-star season, the best of the best. Let's bring in, again, going back to what I said at the very beginning of the podcast, a harder version of a previous game.
I think I said during our Genius 4 coverage, first of all, that I totally agree with that. And I think I may have said Black and White 2 is the best deathmatch game that they run. The one where both players start with 99 points and they just are both putting down blind bids for a point over the course of 9 rounds, trying to win 5 points.
Yeah. And I think that's a way to sort of like, for someone who doesn't enjoy the betting elements, this would be a way to sort of, again, add another layer of thinking on without necessarily relying on that metric. But I could understand, you know, black and white it was ran twice before, right, on the Genius 2. And so, like, it's definitely one of the staples of the franchise, so it makes sense to utilize it. And as it shows, even someone who has previous experience with that game will not necessarily bode well for them entirely.
Right. I believe Junghyun had won both of the previous times that they ran it.
I think Yeowon beat him on the very... I think that was the final 3 game in Genius 2.
You're totally right. He got smoked, as he did here as well.
Even though he tried to use Yeowon's strategy. He's like, sort of, right? Because he says, like, in a confessional, like, oh, Yeowon's strategy was he was going to use, you know, bet in high numbers from the beginning, and so he was going to, like, build up that lead to crush me eventually. He sort of splits the difference by being like, I'll throw out my low numbers first, and then I'll throw out my high numbers. But as a result, you know, I think he... Maybe if he went full Yeowon, it might be a different story, but because he sort of dips his toes in and doesn't completely dive in, Junsok's able to dismantle him.
Yeah, going the middle ground there with that kind of strategy is not the call at all. You're just opening yourself up to all of like the inherent weaknesses that come with that plan. Dom, eulogize your boy now 2 years later. Junghyun, the first boot, unfortunately, like, he does run bad to end up with the convict card
actually, I think you'll find if you watch him do his laps, he runs very well indeed. So Junghyun for me, we make the comparisons with Sangmin and Tony. I think the actual game changers comparison you want to make is that night we were all at Live Nerador seeing Malcolm get blindsided. To me, that's the same reaction that we all had watching Junghyun lose this main match. Just
how could this happen? What a devastating result.
The consensus fan favorite.
If you saw the video of that reaction.
You were loving it. You were
smiling devilishly at the idea of Junghyun going.
Mike, that video, you are the star of that video, and I forgot about that, and now you terrify me. I forgot about how much you terrify me seeing Malcolm.
I'm glad my sociopathic tendencies have been finally revealed. Look, I've ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be some representative of a real life version of the Maddie Sugar and Corinne gif from Survivor Gabon. Now I have it in the flesh with me and Jordan. If I may like kowtow a bit and do some revisionist history, I mean, I love Malcolm. I was devastated to see him go, but it was also fantastic television, and I was smiling through it just because, like, it was extremely ridiculous. And whether or not you typify that with a good or bad adjective, it was ridiculous. And I feel like the only way I could react to it was like, wow, this is extremely entertaining but supremely devastating.
Well, in the words of my boy Jonghyun, saying one thing and doing another is a social issue lately, calling out the fake news crisis back in 2015. What more can I say about it that hasn't already been said? I mean, he's just an innocent angel who was taken from us way too soon, like Malcolm was.
Yeah. I think everyone is on board with that. Yeah. Not to
project my own personal biases here, but it's like going into this season, I obviously knew that one of my favorites is probably going to be gone early. I know that the whole point of All-Star Seasons is to slaughter these sacred cows. You see your darlings get carted off before their time. I was not expecting, on the heels of this just absolutely bonkers premiere, for my own personal favorite to be the one who just like the first victim of the season. It was truly tragic.
Well, I remember just knowing about Dom's affection for Jonghyun. I was thrilled. I was tickled pink sweater about this result.
Well, what I wonder though is, I mean, I love Jonghyun as well. Again, as someone who loves characters, there's nothing better than like his season two narrative of, here's this like kind of old fuddy-duddy that no one really, you know, put stakes into, ends up actually crushing the latter half of the end game by taking on all of these people. But you also have to wonder, like, would he have really stacked up later on in the season? He ends up again being sort of like a randomly guy caught in the gunfire of getting this convict card. But I feel like as the games get more complicated and people get more cutthroat, do you think he could have stood up beside them, or do you think eventually he would have fallen early on as well?
I would personally say, and I think I probably said this many times in the course of our season two podcast, I feel like that's about his best case scenario, is the way season two went for him. I just don't feel like, especially with the main match games that we ended up seeing come up, you know, come out of the draw this season, I don't feel like Jonghyun would have been in there being one of the leaders of strategy for long. But maybe Dom feels differently.
Well, I can actually buy the people who say that if he hadn't finished exactly third, then they wouldn't invite him back for this season. But I like having him there almost, and maybe he always was going to be cannon fodder. He was going to be outmatched by these better players. But I think he added something fun to the season in the depressingly short time that he was there. But others are free to disagree. And if they do, then they can.
I agree.
Then they can not at me and never talk to me again. But anyway, carry on.
No, I agree that he added something to the season. I just don't think, had he stuck around for a while, that he would have been in there with like a great chance at winning the season by any stretch.
It's like one reason why like Keith Nail is always great. He's fantastic from a character perspective, but there might be a certain reason why he was not shown as much in Survivor Cambodia, mm-hmm. as an example. As in a show that really, in that season in particular, really functioned from a strategy storytelling perspective, Keith Nail is not providing much. And so from like a similar perspective, Jonghyun's a fantastic character, but even as he went forward in the season, you have to wonder how much is he going to contribute to that narrative, considering that strategically he doesn't really measure up to everyone around him.
Right. And I mean, I think it's also worth noting, I don't think strategically he's trying to measure up to everyone around him.
No, not at all. And I think that the great thing about this show, as well as really a lot of other reality TV shows, is that one surefire strategy does not work for everyone. Yeah. Jonghyun could not do the Sangmin game of betraying people left and right, but Jonghyun has a way to be able to, you know, cruise his way through the game. I don't think he coasted to the final three on season two. Obviously, he went to a significant number of death matches and was able to defeat a significant number of opponents using his own mental games. It doesn't necessarily lie congruent with the way everyone else is working. And so I do wonder, had he stayed, how much more he would be able to sort of work with the games that the genius was providing them at the time.
Yeah. Well, just a bad player all around. I think we're all on board with that. So I want to ask you guys quickly. I know we all talk about like the Monopoly game for a lot of us as like the best genius episode of all time. This for me might easily be number two. I can't think of what else it would be other than this. I think this is probably my number two genius episode ever, which by extension would be my number two episode of reality TV ever.
Well, that's super interesting because, again, when I went back to my episodic rankings of season four, episode one made the top half, but it was actually like number six.
Wow. Can you go through your rankings? Do you have them handy?
Yeah, I have them right here.
Oh, awesome.
So, well, I guess your version of like this episode or Monopoly game for me, again, as incredibly devastating as the results were, today's menu, episode three, is an amazing episode of television.
Yeah, yeah.
Just from an arc perspective. And so like, even though the results saddened me to no end, that's by far my top episode. Episode four, which had Fish Shop, would be number two. Then I had the final four episode in as number three. That's when you get Cordyceps in and you have the genius players and the guests alternating between the little room and the big room cooperative hold'em. Then it was the Garnet Thief episode, episode six, where Yeonsung and I think Junsok played monorail against each other. Then I had episode 11 as number five. That was the penultimate episode with the SNL cast, as you mentioned before, Colin. Then, as I mentioned, the premiere is number six. Number seven was the finale, which I think, like, I like both of the new games in there. It's just, you know, it was not as exciting as even the previous season's finale because Dongmin essentially crushed Kyunghoon in both of those games. After that was episode nine, which is Horror Race 2. After that was episode eight, which was the Minus Auction, where Kyungrun gets crushed in Gyul Hap. Then the original Horror Race, episode two. Episode five is second to last, Loyalists and Rebels, where Kyungrun beats Yu Yun in Indian Poker. And down at the bottom, even though, again, still a great, a good episode of television, is the aforementioned Seed Poker, episode seven.
Yeah, the only ones I would bump up, and I think I would bump both of them pretty substantially, and I think it's just me being partial to the games, the Minus Auction and this ID exchange. But I also think, and this is something I didn't mention enough at the top of the show, we talked about it a little bit, but at least for me and Dom, we watched those first three seasons in the span of like 2 weeks in winter, in like December and January, 2014 and 2015. And so we had a solid like 5 or 6 months before we saw Bumdi tweet, oh, there's going to be Genius 4, it's all stars, here's the cast, and it's coming very soon. It's coming in like July for US viewers, you know, for the subtitles to come out. I don't know your exact timeline, Mike, but just that anticipation, I really can't overstate how getting new Genius content for the first time in like 6 months and having it be a crazy Sangmin moment in particular yet again, like for this guy to do it again. I said on the first time we podcasted about this episode, like the in real time reaction for me was I paused the episode and got up and walked out of my room for a minute. Like I couldn't handle sitting there and taking in the reveal. I had to get up and walk around for a second because I was so blown away by the big reveal, by the big Sangmin moment this episode.
Yeah, and I think that, again, like, one reason why I personally don't feel that, like, rankings are ever wrong, personal rankings, is because you have emotional connections to certain episodes. And I think that, like, some people, when they make their list, might put today's special at, like, the bottom because they're like, I hated seeing Sangmin go, and I think that's totally fine. But, yeah, I mean, the premiere, yeah, I think the premiere is great, and it's only so far down there just because I think from an entirely packaged episode perspective, there are just five other episodes that are more of a complete package to me, but it's still a really great episode, and I'm so glad I got the opportunity to revisit and talk about it.
Yeah, I think the reason I bring up the nostalgia factor again is I think that's probably why I rank it so highly. Is I totally understand why people who are perhaps just marathoning, not that you did this, but people who eventually do marathon all four seasons of The Genius, you know, if they watched that a few weeks after they watched season two Sangmin or whatever, that's not going to resonate nearly as much because they've, you know, that's all they've been seeing for the last season that they watched.
Exactly. Yeah. It's much like a lot of people say, like, you know, the first Survivor season I watched will be in my top 10 or number one, even though it might not necessarily be what I consider would be a great season. I think, it's all about personal and emotional connotation.
Yeah. Well, Mike, the last time that we got to talk to you about The Genius before this, as you've mentioned, was after Fish Shop. I want to quickly get just some rapid fire kind of updated takes from you about some of the people that we've talked a little bit about, but not so much over the course of this podcast. Where are you just currently on Kyungran? How do you think she did over the course of the rest of the season?
Season one, I think from a personality and character perspective, she was fantastic, right? She was very like feisty, would not take any bull crap. This time around, I feel like she changed her tune a bit, just because, again, we talked about this idea of this big Friends of Sangmin alliance really sticking loyal through the latter half of the game, and I feel like we didn't see as much from Kyungran this time around. I still think, especially with the returning player seasons, I tend to sort of separate their arcs just because they can have such different arcs in different seasons. So I still can appreciate Kyungran from season one, but I would say I don't think she's shown as much in season four.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think Kyungran and her performance in season one is really important, honestly, for the course of like the history of the franchise, to have a woman do that well. I think, frankly, like, this is a show, we don't talk about it, this aspect of it enough, but like, this is frankly a really like male heavy show, and I think it's really good for the franchise to have Kyungran in there, because I think it would be severely lacking without her, and it frankly is severely lacking even with her, to the point of like embarrassment.
And she's the highest ranking female in this season as well. She comes in at number five or number six.
Yeah, not a good exit for Kyungran, but I think I don't think there was any other way that was going to go, regardless of what the death match was. When she, like I've said before about her, I think this was just another TV show for her. She's going to be on another one. This is what she does. Whereas for someone like Kyunghoon and Hyunmin, this is like the opportunity of a lifetime. Of course, they're going to go home and practice the death matches, you know, hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where are you at on Jinho, who has another deep run here?
Yeah, Jinho's an interesting one as well. And that, like, as you said, he makes a super deep run. He goes further than he did in season two. He makes it all the way to fourth place. But I don't know. Maybe it's sort of like we know what Jinho is capable of, that this time did not necessarily stand out to me in particular. And I love Jinho. Specifically, his season one arc is incredible, and he's a fantastic representation of being sort of the icon of the genius, and how he was able to really rely on his individual game and his individual smarts to make it that far into the competition. Here I feel like it's a little more subdued. I know we were talking about Yeowon before as sort of like getting the dopey music, but I feel like there was a lot more of like making fun of Jinho for his stutter and for his general mannerisms, just because he is sort of a tried and true character here. He's going to get, you know, an individual win, I believe, in the minus auction. But outside of that, you know, I can't really think of too many big Jinho moments, which is not knocking him whatsoever. But again, I feel like when you have people like Kyunghoon really taking a lot of the narrative in the latter half of the season, unfortunately you have to compensate that by Jinho not getting too much as a result.
Right. I think like even Hyunmin starts taking a back seat in the back half of the season. And I know Jinho has said like in exit press after the season that he really wishes he did not just do whatever Dongmin wanted to do so often, which I think is a reasonable thing to have a regret about given how this ended up playing out. And actually, let's get into Dongmin a bit. I know he's come up, but this, as I mentioned, was for me another episode of Dongmin just doing an incredible job that to me defies any sense of like things we've seen in U.S. from U.S. reality contestants, short of like maybe Will Kirby. To me, just like the almost like magic that Dongmin is able to get things done with the success rate that he has, where certainly the first time we started seeing Dongmin at the beginning of season three, my initial take was, wow, this guy's just a wolfier version of Kim Gura. He has absolutely no shot. Mike, he goes on to become a two-time winner of the genius, both in tremendous fashion. Where are you on Dongmin and just his place in the pantheon of reality contestants?
Yeah, I mean, he's got the Dong mist going on. and I think it can also be like sort of a, speaking of which, sort of like a Dan versus Dr. Will comparison a bit, in that I think I'm not going to take a side between the two, but I think that like Will is probably the better entertainer and better television than Dan. Much like if you're comparing Dongmin and Sangmin, which I think is the argument for like which is the better player, I think that Sangmin provides the better television, but he also has probably more glaring flaws in that like he can't really win a death match than someone like Dongmin. And I think, again, like I sort of said at the beginning of this podcast, this season really raised Dongmin's ranking for me, in that he really proved that he can't, you know, he's not just focused on the social ideas of the game, of like he's only able to get far because he's able to, some might say, bully people into alliances and make them do what he wants. He really possesses a lot of mental capabilities where, as someone who grew up on a farm and, you know, then spent some time in the military, he's not going to these highly educated schools like someone like Hyunmin is, but he has the base intellect to be able to really outmaster some of these games, and I have to give him major kudos. Total 180 on Dongmin this season, and he really, I mean, I would probably say he's probably the best genius player ever.
The terms we tend to put it in are Sangmin is the most entertaining player and Dongmin is just the best player, like the most capable player. And for me, like that, I would truly, after seeing his run on Genius 4, I would not have come close to saying this after just Genius 3, because frankly, I think we saw, as far as death matches went for him at that point, all we really had to go on was Monorail, which he really played to lose twice. Like both of his moves that he made were terrible up until the bluff, and he just got very lucky that Yanju didn't, you know what was going on there. But after seeing him on this season and seeing him crush Gyeolhaap and seeing him completely able to hang with Hyunmin and Kyunghoon and Cordyceps in the cooperative Hold'em games, and knowing that Sangmin, inversely, anytime math has been part of the game, Sangmin has just struggled beyond belief, which people don't tend to seem to notice. Dongmin for me is very clearly above Sangmin as far as if I had to bet my life, and I really hope it doesn't come across as results oriented just because he's won twice and Sangmin's only won once. I think Dongmin, like Sangmin, has a glaring weakness when it comes to math, whereas Dongmin, it seems, just accomplishes everything he sets out to accomplish.
And I think it's okay to say that it's a result-oriented, though. I'm going to trigger you guys again, but this also reminds me a bit of, like, a lot of the community's mentality towards Sandra. I think the first time that she won, people were like, oh, she's a fun character, it makes sense why she won. But I think the second time around, people were really thinking, oh, okay, this really puts her in contention for one of the best players ever, considering she was really able to do what can be near impossible twice. And I feel like you do have to take that into account. The fact that, like you said, Dongmin the first time around, I wouldn't say it's nothing remarkable, but I think compared to the other two, he played the game a very different way. But the fact that he was able to really show off, oh, I have these other skills as well in his second time around, should be taken into account when you analyze him as a player.
Yeah, although I would say for Sandra, I think it starts with she won twice, so let's reverse engineer why everything she did was right. Whereas for Dongmin, I think the argument I would make at least is his collective body of work leads me to believe, to have so much faith in him. And it just makes sense, of course, that he's going to win twice. For me, it's such a different game. Like there's no way no way to back into winning the Genius, whereas you can certainly back into winning Survivor.
We don't relitigate that for the 100th time, I don't think.
Yeah, sorry. All right. Dom, and where are you at? Do you think Dongmin is the best? I'm sure you think he's the best genius player, but where is he for you in just the history of reality TV? Like when you factor in the Wills and Dans and Tonys or Kims or what?
It's so difficult to say. I mean, it's fun to the mental image of seeing Dongmin interact with like Dan or Kim would be. I don't know if it really lends itself for any kind of straight up comparison. But
I feel like Jinho and Dan would have a good alliance. I think those two would be good.
I imagine like Dongmin just seeing through Dan's bullshit and calling him out on it constantly, and Dan just having to strain to every fiber of his being to keep that veneer together.
Okay. So Mike, actually, before we get you out of here, what is your genius season rankings?
Yeah, I go between 3 and 4 consistently as my number one. I mean, again, as such a Hyunmin lover, and the fact that even though I rooted for Hyunmin above Dongmin in the final two, I was such a fan of that pairing because, again, this is also a little unprecedented in the Genius. We've seen coalitions before, but we haven't seen like an almost secret alliance take down the rest of the competition. So that was really cool to watch, and there was so much other fun stuff going on in that season. So my gut tells me 3, 4, 1, 2, but catch me at any point in time during the week, and it could very easily alternate between 3 and 4 for my number one.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that I think most people say either 3-4-1-2 or 4-3-1-2, but there is kind of a subset, and I know like Josh Wiggler is part of this, and Miles Nye and AJ Mass all are big first two season proponents and would say that they are clearly the better two seasons. What do you think about that and just that kind of perspective?
I mean, I think it's also like we're going back to historical connotation, right, where I feel like season 3 and 4 might be the more bombastic seasons where they're saying like, okay, now that we have the ground structure laid down, now we can really like put the frills and all the other set dressing on it. Whereas seasons 1 and 2 were much more of like a raw, simplistic game. So I can definitely understand the merits of that. I mean, like season 2 in particular for me, and I know Dom, you're a big fan of season 2. For me, again, I'm someone who enjoys unpredictability. As amazing of a character as Sangmin is, I'm not entirely appreciative of the fact that someone just wins, what, like 7 main matches in a row. It's crazy. But in terms of like wanting to vary things up a bit, like we even see in an episode like Fish Shop, season 2 didn't really have that. So that's why like season 3 and 4 are exciting for me, is because like even though I said Dongmin and Hyunmin are going to kind of take apart everyone else as they cruise into the end game, we have the constellation game, you know, we have Dongmin going into the death match during the chain auction. We have these moments where those things are tested, whereas Sangmin, because of his amazing body of work, didn't really need to be tested in that regard in season 2 to have those things incorporated into his own arc in that season.
Yeah, I think Sangmin, it's kind of like, I don't know how well this reference is going to go over with either of you two, but the argument is made that LeBron James doesn't get the support he should for MVP from year to year because people just start expecting him to average like 32 points a game, so he doesn't really get credit for doing that. I think that was kind of season 2 for Sangmin. We were just so used to him being so dominant and creative that we kind of got complacent with it, and it didn't stand out because it was just happening every single week at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I wouldn't necessarily say like season 2 was the Survivor One World or Survivor Redemption Island of the genius, but I think there might be some comparisons in there in that, you know, there are different games every week, but the same result kind of happens week after week after week. It's still great television to watch, but it's not like next level while you're wondering every week, like, okay, like Sangmin fell this last time. Is he going to be able to recover? Almost like, you know, Jinho does this amazing thing in season 1 where like sometimes he'll win, sometimes he enters the death match and wins. And so it's much more of an erratic hills and valleys type of journey, whereas Sangmin was just one big old mountain climb atop Mount Everest.
Right. And I mean, for me, if we want to compare it to Survivor, as a first time viewing experience, I would take The Genius 2 over any season of Survivor. I know that's probably not the same for everyone, but that's certainly like all 4 seasons of The Genius are better than any season of Survivor for me.
Ooh, that's, I don't think I'd go that far, but I think, you know, The Genius, I think it should be very indicative that we are talking so highly of a series that it only ran for 4 seasons.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there are certain times when like a show has to run, especially from a reality perspective, runs like 6 to 10 seasons before people start saying like, oh yeah, this is really a top quality show across the board. And the fact that all 4 seasons, no matter what your thoughts on it, are so high quality is just a great representation of how this is an incredible reality show from the get-go. That being said, you know, they decided to stop it. I think that's okay if it means that, you know, I'd rather have 4 amazing seasons of The Genius than 4 amazing seasons of The Genius and like 2 or 3 good seasons and like 2 to 3 okay seasons and 2 to 3 seasons that I'm not really into. You know, I'd rather sort of like from a like what they do with British TV where they'll just like cut it off when they decide like, yep, that's a good stopping point. I think that's a good point part on top of the producers, even though that means that we are missing out on genius content.
Yeah, I'm with that. I'll ask a British person now. Dom, is this a good stopping point for you? Do you have any other takes on this episode of The Genius or The Genius in general for right now?
I'm sure there are many more takes I can dredge up for The Genius, but I think this is a good time to close it out for now.
Okay, how about you? Anything else you wanted to get to, Mike, about The Genius?
I don't think so, or anything else, really.
I'll
go back to it. Let's just circle back to the International Survivor talk.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think, again, I'll just say that I want to thank you guys for even, you know, 2 years after the fact that we're recording this, really introducing the reality TV community to this. I mean, now that we have like Robin Stevens' book that they're working on as well, there are so many people that have been able to check out this show and really see what a fantastic reality show can really look like in terms of like incorporating strategy and characters. It doesn't need to necessarily rely on one thing entirely. And I think it also shows that like we all don't watch reality TV for the same reasons, right? You guys, again, like to watch much more for the gameplay aspects. I probably watch things more for the characters and entertainment and, you know, narrative things going on. But shows like The Genius are able to kind of combine it all in one. And that's the mark of a great reality show, is able to take so many factors that have people watching for so many reasons, blend them up into this like delicious smoothie, and serve them out in many, many glasses for people to drink. So again, thank you so much for having me on, for giving me an excuse to dip back into an episode of The Genius. I feel like once you like pop, the fun don't stop, in that, you know, now I'm really itching to, even though I'm not a big fan of Horror Race, to just like keep going just because it really reminded me of like how fantastic this show can be.
Especially knowing that I would get to today's menu and fish off immediately afterwards. But yeah, I always love talking about The Genius, and in the 5 years that we've been doing this, obviously we've got to meet so many great people, including you, Mike. But one of my favorite just things about doing this has been getting to discover The Genius and like percolate that to a wider audience and seeing this whole like niche community kind of form around it and really fall in love with the show and get so much enjoyment out of it. And the fact that I was able to play some small part in like bringing that to people is really been fun.
Yeah, and I think along those lines, a big shout out, not that they will ever hear this, but of course, Bum Diddly Umptious for all Woo! Of God's work that they did. Credit will never be sufficiently given to whoever he or she is. Could never have obviously done any of this without you. And all people should always be eternally grateful to be God.
Yeah, and what I will say at the end, I forget if you guys had ever talked Society Game. If you're looking for something that like has some similar DNA, check it out. I think it definitely has a little bit more of like the Survivor-like two tribe functioning. I won't get too much into the format of Society Game. I was able to eventually get through it. It's a pretty good watch. I don't think it's anything as high stakes and high entertainment as a show like The Genius, but I'd say you're not wasting your time by watching Society Game.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. Dom has not yet wasted nor not wasted his time because he hasn't given it a chance yet.
Well, you say that. I've been watching it this week. I'm on the episode before the finale, so I can finish it today, I reckon. And it's fun. You know, it's definitely worth watching, but not doesn't get me excited in the same way that the Genius does.
Okay. Well, Mike, as you mentioned, at least for you and for us as well, once you pop, the fun don't stop, it seems, on The Genius. And this may actually, it turns out, not be the last kind of Genius rewatch podcast we do soon. We've been in contact with Miles Nye, who is down to come on as the world's number one authority on Food Chain and talk through that episode with us at some point. So be on the lookout for that as well. Until then, you can follow Mike on Twitter, @MikeBloomType. Mike, anything else you wanted to add?
No, just check out. I do a lot of content that I'm putting out there. I just finished covering...
Yeah, yeah. What are you podcasting about? Sorry for interrupting you as you were saying that.
Oh, no problem at all. So I just finished... I guess I'll start with from a scripted TV perspective. I just finished covering season 3 of Fargo and season 3 of The Leftovers for the Jay and Jack Network. Two really high-quality dramas that are out there. Colin, I know you and I have talked in particular about Fargo Season 3. They've both been a lot of fun, so if you want to check that out in the archives. On the Rob Has a Podcast Planet in terms of reality television, I'm finishing up coverage of RuPaul's Drag Race, which had a very eventful finale. I'll leave it at that. I'll also be talking about Top Chef. I'll be talking about International Survivor at some point. I'm also going to be talking about the brief revival of Battle of the Network Stars 2. I'll be doing the Survivor Historians. We're about to jump into covering Survivor Gabon. And I am so nervous but so excited to say that I have joined the reality TV exit press realm. I'll be doing Survivor exit press for Parade starting in the fall. And actually, breaking news, now it's exclusively on Dom and Colin, I will be also doing exit interviews for Big Brother 19 for Parade as well.
There you go.
Well, if you want anyone to hear that, you should probably announce it somewhere else. But we appreciate the heads up.
It's also a long game, so even if they catch this like 5 weeks from now, they can still jump in. So yeah, just follow me on Twitter. I'll be sure to post everything there. But again, thank you guys so much for having me on. This was so much fun to do.
Yeah, hey, thank you so much for coming on. All fantastic as always. I am on Twitter @ColinStone. Dom is @DomHRV. And Dom, what is currently pinned to the top of your Twitter page that people should know about?
Yeah, so while you're following me and liking all my tweets and then retweeting them and telling me how amazing they are, you should go to the pinned tweet, which is the survey that I put together for... we're making an effort to refine the show, expand into new areas, and we want to hear firstly what you think of the show as it is and where you would like it to go in the future. So if you could take however many minutes you feel like is appropriate to fill that out, that would be very much appreciated. We've had a lot of responses so far, all very useful, but the more the merrier. So if you could do that for us, we'll try and return the favor at some point.
Yeah, we'll fill out your survey, I guess. Okay,
well, metaphorically. Okay, Jesus Christ.
All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much once again. Great times. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back very soon with some more off-season content that we are very excited about, probably early July, potentially back soon with more Genius stuff. So until next time, take care. Fighting.